Good morning, everyone. I don't know what I look more forward to, it being a Friday or you saying that it's the best day ever invented.
I'll say it if you want me to say it.
I can't start my Friday without it.
Welcome to Friday, everybody, the greatest day ever invented. And I say that because I really do. I think it is. It's perfect. And I know you have to work on Friday. Like for most people, you get Saturday and Sunday off for most people. But with Friday, you have the whole weekend ahead of you. You haven't wasted a minute of it yet.
I am so with you. In fact, my younger son, Dylan, had a tough time waking up this morning. And I said, it is so awesome to wake up on Fridays because you're closer to the weekend.
Right.
Waking up is the hardest part for a teenage boy, really for anyone.
But knowing as you're waking up, like when your first thought is, it's Friday, it's much, much easier.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Best day ever invented.
It's
you said it yourself.
It's the best day ever invented. So thank you to the Dutch for inventing Friday. I think they were the ones. There used to be, in the old days, I read about this, there was a big gaping hole after Thursday. There was just nothing, and people would sit around, and they'd say, we should put something in here, because Saturday's still a little ways away. And the Dutch were the first to say, well, we'll try a Friday and see what happens. Boy, were they right.
Man, I love Fridays.
Boy, were they right. You missed Jesse White.
I heard. I was listening.
Of Tumblr fame.
I love him.
So now, you've met him before,
yes.
Right? He's a very nice man.
And what he does to help everyone just amazes me.
Well, he turned around for a long time, and they mentioned this on Steve's show. If you went in to have anything done with your driver's license, anything, you knew that it was going to take at least 5 hours. You just had to spend the day just standing in line. And then when you were done with that line, they'd put you in another line. And he said, enough of this. He streamlined the service. It's amazing. Several years ago at the last station that you and I both worked at separately, we would have him on about every 4 months. And we would do a segment called Ask the Secretary of State. So every time Jesse White would come in, he had this big, burly bodyguard, just a guy, you know, guys who just, they're just, like every part of him is made of muscle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his,
kind of like you.
Similar to me. It would be, imagine a smaller version of me, a less muscular version of me. This guy was always just next to Jesse, just to make sure that everything went according to plan. And he had no expression on his face ever, as stoic as could be. Like whenever you'd see this guy, his face, because of the muscles in his face, he couldn't react positively or negatively. He would just stare straight ahead. He'd give you that death gaze, you know? So one time we had Jesse White on, and he just stood, this bodyguard just stood in the kind of the corner of the studio, again, to make sure that I didn't rush him at any point during the interview. I don't know why I would, but he was just there to make sure that nothing bad happened. So I said to Jesse White, and I was kind of half kidding, I said, there should be a law in Illinois. If you have a license plate, like I saw a lady and her license plate said hot one. And then I pulled up alongside of her and I got to be honest, she was not that hot. I said, that should be illegal. Jeez. And that guy who never reacts to anything goes, I hear you.
He talked
was,
even?
Yeah, he's nodding his head. He's like, yeah, that should be a law. He was on my side.
Can I just say something, Mr. Superficial?
Yes.
That woman is hot to someone.
I guess she is.
So, you know, the hot-o-meter.
That lady doesn't even exist. I just made it up for the sake of telling him that joke. There is no lady with a hot...
I bet there is.
There might be, but I didn't really see her. I just said it to make Jesse White's bodyguard react to something.
Well, congratulations to you.
I succeeded. Very proud of that.
You're the type of person who could... What did Jimmy Pardo call it yesterday? Funny to the bone, or...
Yeah, I don't understand what he meant by that.
It means it's innate. It's born. You're just funny. He said, like Bill Left, for instance,
can't write
a joke to save his butt, which is not true.
That should have hurt my feelings.
It
should have.
You know he was kidding.
I think so. I hope so. I hope he was.
No, he totally was kidding. But you're funny to the bone. And
wasn't
there a comedy club called the Funny Bone?
The Funny Bone had a all around the country. They were very popular.
And why is a funny bone not so funny? The ulna nerve. Why does it hurt so much when you hit it? It's not funny at all.
Boy, that's a good question.
It hurts.
I don't know the answer to that. It's ironically named. That's the most ironically named bone. I think. No, maybe I'm... No, now that I think about it, I'm probably wrong.
It's not even a bone. It's a nerve.
It is a nerve. Yeah.
I don't like it. We have to change that.
All right.
And add another day to the weekend.
If only Jesse White were still here. He has pull.
I actually wanted to talk to him, but I looked online. It's like driveillinois.com or something like that. IllinoisDrivesMeCrazy.com,
something like that.
Because Michael, my oldest son, has not gotten a license, and his permit is expiring.
Oh.
But I learned that you can renew it.
online. You don't have to do that in person, right?
You may have to do it in person. No. Actually, you're right about that. I'm going to check online.
Oh.
You can renew it twice. Why don't kids want to drive? I just don't get that.
Isn't that strange? Reese is the same way. You know, she's way past 16 at this point and just has little to no desire. And, you know, she and I talked about this once because I get that. I've mentioned this to you on the show several times. I get so nervous seeing people texting and driving or doing other things and driving. You know, some people are playing a video game while they're driving or they're
shaving. I have seen someone shave.
Making fondue while they're driving. You have to focus on the road. But she said to me, it makes me so nervous to see people not focused on the road. And I'm living that every day. I see that every single day.
I know. And Michael, when I've taken him out driving and he has like one more hour at the driving school, he knows what to do. He's just uncomfortable doing it.
Yeah.
And I might have made him more nervous, but I thought about it and made myself nervous. When you're driving down the expressway and you stay in your lane, you are counting on so many other people to stay in their lane, too.
Right.
And just this morning, for instance, people just cut in front of you without turn signals or directional, as I still like to call it.
Yeah.
That's
or the
school.
Blinker. You can say the blinker.
Oh, I like the blinker, too. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you have to really rely on everyone else to follow the rules. And as you know, a lot of people don't follow the rules.
I'm now driving assuming that people around me are texting while they're driving. Like, that never used to be the case. But now, as I'm driving, there was a guy on either Monday or Tuesday when I was driving home from here. You know, if you're driving down a residential street, the polite thing to do is you stay to the right on your side, and the oncoming vehicle should also be doing it on the other side.
You mean you don't drive down the middle of the street like I do?
This guy was driving right down the middle of the street, and as he approached, I could see his phone. So he's focused on texting, you know, figuring we're only doing 25 in a residential area. This is fine. I'll have time to react. He's getting closer and closer, and I start honking and honking. He finally swerves over at the last second. But again, if I don't start honking, there's a huge accident.
Yeah. I do drive down the middle of the street when no one's there, but I'm not texting.
When no one's there, yeah. Have at it. But if, you know, if a car is approaching, you got to slide over.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I also pull over if there are parked cars. I'm always the one to pull over and motion someone to come by.
Sure.
They never do that to me, ever. There are times that I'm like, I'm just going to wait and see. They
it
just
never
barrel
happens.
Through. Nope.
I know. If you're the lady with the Hot One license plate, I apologize.
Hope you're hotter.
I don't want to. I know. Maybe I caught you on a bad day. Maybe you didn't
That's
have
a good point.
Maybe you didn't have time to spruce yourself up. But if your license plate says Hot One, you owe it to society to live up to that, I think. All right, we'll take a quick break. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about a bunch of different things all at the start of the show, most notably the fact that a lot of kids just don't want to drive anymore. Why? What's happened to the kids?
That is a great question, and Glenn has a great answer, I think. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Wendy. As soon as you said it, I had a call right away because I can answer it instantaneously.
What is it?
Which would you? It would be very simple. Would you prefer having a limousine driver or drive your own car?
Honestly, I'd rather drive my own car, but I see what you're saying.
The teenagers definitely wouldn't mind having you chauffeur them around without any question. And your other comments earlier also about people texting and driving, I can beat texting and driving with a $100 bill because I'm driving through Indianapolis. There was a gentleman strumming his guitar on sheet music on his steering wheel. He was writing music as he was driving.
Have you called before and told us this? Because if you haven't, then someone else said the exact same thing.
Well, I might have.
Because that's pretty memorable, that somebody's writing music while they're driving. Baby,
yeah,
you can drive my car.
Right. Just crossing out notes on a sheet.
Yeah, and then run into the side of my truck. You know,
right, that's how that song ends. Ugly.
But at least it happened in Indiana and not in Illinois, because we know Illinois drivers would never do anything
the
like
best,
that.
Or in the top 50 yeah. best anyway.
Exactly.
All right, well, thank you so much, Glenn. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Peggy wants to have, she has a theory too. Hi, Peggy, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. I think it's because we raise our kids to be afraid of everything. You know, don't ride your bike without your helmet. Don't do this. Don't do that. My daughter is 21 years old. She has no desire to get a driver's license. She had a permit once because you have to take driver's ed.
Yeah. To graduate.
Have a permit.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well,
there's a requirement that you, because it's a school-required thing, so if you don't take it through the school you take it outside, you have to have a certificate.
Oh.
But it's only the driving I mean, the school part. It's
right.
The actual driving. So she never took the actual driving part.
I mean,
she has never driven a car. She lives in the city, and she's just fine with taking the bus.
Does it have anything to do with nerves at all? Is she just nervous about it? It does.
She doesn't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And now they have Uber, so she, like I said, she lives in the city. She needs a car. She calls Uber.
They do make it easier to get around. My son walks everywhere, but he went downtown for something. He took a train there and took a Lyft home.
Yeah.
So
right.
They really don't need, plus they can't afford a car, so what's the difference?
So she has no desire to drive whatsoever.
Isn't that something? Every one of my friends, mm-hmm. myself included, within 2 days of our birthdays, our 16th birthdays, we all had licenses.
Me too. I went on my birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have older kids that are in their 30s, their mid-30s.
Yeah.
But my one daughter got her little blue slip from school, had a car, and had to wait till her birthday, and you would have thought she was dying.
Right. It's an eternity. I get it.
Oh, my God.
All right, well, we can't raise such fraidy cats, although we know too much. We have too much information now. I mean, think about it. We never sat in car seats when we were like standing in the back. I used to lay in the back of the hatchback and stuff.
I know. In that back windshield.
Yeah.
That was a nap place back then. Not anymore.
And they see all those car crashes on TV. They see all these people dying. They hear all these things from the time they're little. And we have made them afraid of it.
Well, I apologize for making everybody afraid.
Nation of Freddy Cats, Wendy. Nation of Freddy Cats.
Thank you, Peggy. I'm noticing you're like Goldilocks right now with your headphones.
Because why?
You've gone through like three pair.
It's a long story, but this one broke on me. One didn't sound right. It is like Goldilocks. One sounded too loud. One sounded too soft. But these, Wendy, are just right.
Perfect.
They're like porridge. Look at the faulty workmanship.
Oh, yeah, that's a problem.
Dangerous.
The connector got disconnected from the actual cord part.
Can you solder that? I got to run over to Radio Shack, a Tandy company, by the way. I'll solder this during the break. Eric Soderholm and I will work on this and get this fixed.
That's another question I have. I know I brought up Funny Bone. Don't lick a live wire, dummy. The Funny Bone is really not funny, and solder looks like it should be pronounced solder.
Yeah, how about that?
I have so many questions going into the weekend.
Luckily, there's still 3.5 hours of show left, so stick around. We'll answer all Wendy's questions before the day is over. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thank you. And Kevin, thank you for the scary music.
It's very moody.
Very moody.
Oh, it's Kanye.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
That's my boy.
Enough said.
Tony Hinchcliffe is in studio, longtime collaborator of Kanye West.
We're on an ultralight beam. This is a God dream.
This is a God dream.
This is everything. Yeah.
Boy, woo. That's beautiful.
Everything. Trying to keep my faith. We on an ultralight beam. We on an ultralight beam.
Is this Kanye?
Yeah.
No, that's Tony Hinchcliffe.
Oh, my God, you're good.
I love
Kanye.
Kanye
West. Why do you even do stand-up comedy? You could easily make a living as a rapper.
I have been writing letters to Kanye regularly saying, please, let me be your new lead vocalist. You make the beats. You do the drops.
Yeah, farm them out to you.
I use all these terms.
Yeah.
You know what, though? With Twitter now, you can actually reach out and make a connection that way. Have you tried?
Totally. Nothing worked. Nothing.
Zero.
Worked. Yeah, zero.
But you're young, Tony. Don't give up on your dream.
Exactly.
All right. That's right.
I'm trying my best.
We were just trying to figure out, a couple years ago, you came through town with Jeffrey Ross.
Yeah.
And we had you on then. Mm-hmm. And both Wendy and I were incredibly impressed and said, someday, fingers crossed, mm-hmm. we've got to bring Tony in again. Today's that day.
I'm excited to be here. It is very surreal because I was here with the Roastmaster General, and it's one of those things where when you're traveling with your mentor, you know, you're hanging out doing cool stuff, and you're like, maybe one day. And you're right, here it is. It's only a couple of years later, and I'm here all by myself. The little baby boy is all grown up.
Yep.
Our little Tony has grown up.
We knew it would happen. We're so proud of you. When you say Jeff is your mentor, let's describe that relationship. What have you learned from him so far?
Well, just a lot. I mean, a lot of just comedy ethics and how to carry yourself and how to be nice to people and how to look at the positives of things. I mean, he was trained at, he came up at the Friars Club in New York. I mean, he's like old school, new school. So to get to have a mentor like that, that has like, you know, his mentors had mentors that like started comedy basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get to learn all these cool, just basically being positive and looking at the positives and not being competitive or jealous, but when you are, use it to your advantage and things like that, you know.
How'd you guys hook up originally?
Originally, he found out that there was this young host, new host at the Comedy Store, a door guy that was making fun of everybody before they came up, after they were done with their 3-minute sets at the Comedy Store. I just started ripping into everybody and made it my own little thing. And one night at the Comedy Store, he came up to me and goes, "Hey, are you the host guy that's been making fun of everybody?" I go, "Yeah, I love making fun of people. It's my everything. You know, that's why it's such a pleasure to get to hang out with guys like you and, you know, get to meet you. And it's like a big deal to me." And he's like, "I think I might have a job for you." And I started helping him write for the roast of Quentin Tarantino. And the rest is history after that. I've written for the last 6 Comedy Central roasts and having a blast.
I love that you mentioned he taught you to be nice to people. Here's why. I had never met Jeffrey Ross before. Wendy had never met him before. We'd seen him on TV a bunch of times. But when you watch him on TV or see him in a club, you say to yourself, "Oh, that guy's got an axe to grind. That's a mean man, that Jeff Ross."
Yeah.
No.
He's just funny.
Nice guy.
Exactly. He has an outlet for his roasting and for his, you know, edgy things. So since you have an outlet for that, it's like UFC fighters. Something that I've learned from hanging with Joe Rogan a lot is you would think, "Oh, gosh, these guys might start a fight at a bar." No, it's the opposite. They're training all day. They have their outlet. They hit a punching bag. It's the idiot that's lazy all day, you know, sitting in an office that's starting fights with people because they have that all pent up inside of them. Yeah. Whereas a roast comic, we're generally extremely nice, very good-hearted people because we have an outlet for that.
Yeah.
So now, you mentioned Joe Rogan. Yeah. That kind of helped catapult you to stardom a little bit, didn't it, his podcast?
It's true. It's huge. You know, a lot of trolls say you'd be nothing without Joe Rogan, and I completely agree with them. I would be. I mean, just like with any show that has you on and things like, I mean, I'm pretty sure Chris Farley would be nothing without Saturday Night Live, you know? So it's like anybody who gives you a shot. But Rogan's the man. And again, that's another guy that I always wanted to work with when I was coming up in comedy. And it's so surreal that those two guys are two of my best pals now.
Have you talked to Joe Rogan? Most people know Joe Rogan from news radio. He was on news radio for a bunch of years, but he's a really good stand-up too.
Yeah.
But he's got theories about the Kennedy assassination that are mind-boggling. Have you discussed this with him at all?
I didn't really know about this.
Talk to him about the Kennedy assassination. He can go for days.
Well, I'm pretty sure he believes in Sasquatch.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting one.
He does.
I wonder if that wires into his JFK thing, if it was Sasquatch from the upper floor of the book depository.
Could have been.
Well, maybe have him on your podcast, Kill Tony, at killtony.com, and ask him about the whole JFK thing.
Yeah, totally. He's been on a couple times before, big fun episodes, and I'm totally going to do that. That's interesting.
You grew up in Ohio, in Youngstown, Ohio.
Yeah.
So what was going on in your childhood that made you believe you could achieve what you're doing right now?
Oh, everything. I mean, I don't know if you're kidding, but do you know about Youngstown?
A little bit.
I know nothing about it.
When I was growing up there, it was the murder capital of the world, per capita ratio. It makes Detroit look like Disneyland. Like, seriously, really, really terrible. Bullet holes through my windows, through my house. Stuff stolen when I'd come home from school. Oh, the Nintendo that I got 3 years after my buddies that had money, gone. It's gone now. Nintendo's gone. VCR's gone with my, you know, performance in a first grade play in it. And, you know, I had to use my sense of humor. It's all that I had. I'm 5'9 now, and I didn't shoot up to 5'9 until like my junior year of high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was 4'6", had nothing, had this skinny frame still. And my way of making friends and defending myself was all the same thing, and that was making people laugh.
Yeah.
If you tried to bully me, you better watch it, because I'm going to call you whatever the target is that I've, you know, my predator, just I scan you. And I'm ready to fire off. But on the contrary, if you want to be my friend, I'll, you know, make fun of someone else. You know what I mean? So it's like I used it to my advantage. It was my only equity, was learning how to be quick and either make people laugh to get them to not want to beat me up or have to fire it off verbally. And that was my assault system. That was my scare 'em first. apologize later type of thing.
Every parent tells their kid that. I have two boys. They're teenage boys, and I always say that, deflect with making them laugh.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's working that well, but I mean, that's really, if that's all you have.
I think it's a lot easier to learn it when you're either about to get beat up or not beat up. I don't know if it's something your mom can tell you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of a different thing. But there's not a doubt in my mind that growing up in Youngstown and, you know, just being scared and it being dangerous and tough walks to and from school. I mean, even the walk from the bus to inside your house could be scary. I mean, I just remember like looking behind trees and things like that.
Wow.
Very, 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 you know, it definitely made me.
So it's a survival tactic. Did you find as you got involved in stand-up and you talked to more and more guys and got their backstory that story came up quite often?
Not exactly every once in a while. Definitely things like that. I mean, everybody sort of has a different thing. Maybe they had, you know, abusive parents or a tough grandpa or whatever it was. You know what I mean? Or they were very poor is a very common thing. There's always something. The people that come from money and success in a nice place are never that funny.
Isn't that weird?
There's a couple of them.
Is that really true?
There's a small percentage. I mean, you find some.
There's like Chris D'Elia is amazing. I don't know if you know who that is, but his dad's a big-time executive producer, and you would never know it. Chris is just hilarious, amazing actor, amazing comedian. It still shocks me that there's not like something. Like, I don't know, maybe we'll read about it in a book one day. But he's just awesome, you know? But there's very few like that. In fact, that's really like the only one I can think of right now is a guy that like, you know, had a normal life and is truly hilarious.
When you go back there now, is it hard for you to believe that that's where you started? Is it a shock or not?
And I think that's another thing that plays right into it is I don't take a day of it for granted. When I fly back to L.A. and I get in my nice new car and go to my own apartment with little black hardwood floors.
Oh, nice.
Every time I walk in, it's just like unbelievable. So I don't take a day of it for granted. The same brain that was trained to be scared and be on the lookout is now like, oh my God, that's my patio with the patio doors open every day. Like I never get used to it.
No one stole your Atari at the new place.
Exactly.
Not yet.
And it really does surprise me. It's weird. Even now, even like every other night, I'll say it used to be every night forever. We'll say for the first 25 years of my life, every night I would fall asleep staring underneath the bedroom door, like just making sure there's not 2 feet there. It's pathetic, right? And now it's down to like every other night. I'll just glance at it for a second, be like, yep, no feet there.
You should just leave the door open and then you don't worry about it.
Well, that would sort of really defeat the purpose. My theory is that if I close the door and lock it, at least I'll have 5 seconds warning before somebody comes in. This is literally how my sad, depressed brain works.
But you got the great black hardwood floor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally worth it.
Tony Hinchcliffe is here. He's performing at Zanies all this week. Zanies.com/Chicago. All your ticket information's there. We'll continue this conversation next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. What do you think, Tony? You got this one?
Oh, I have no idea.
I don't know what this is either. Who?
Tame Impala.
Tame Impala?
Yeah.
I am so unhip.
Yep. Tony Hinchcliffe is here performing at Zanies in Chicago tonight through Sunday. Go to zanies.com. Your ticket information is there. Tony, in addition to being a fine stand-up comic, as we mentioned, you write for these the roasts on Comedy Central. Did you write for the Donald Trump roast, or were you not on board for
that? That was actually the first televised roast that I ever wrote for.
And what was that like?
That was it was really cool. I mean, I just remember being super duper poor, you know, being like three, four years into stand-up comedy, and I remember I was living in a studio apartment with three other comedians. We had bunk beds. I was on the top bunk, and they were all out of town the night of that showing. And I remember watching it on a little tiny TV from the top bunk, leaning over and getting to see one of the jokes that I wrote get performed. And literally it was, you know, one of those life changing moments. So that's really what I take from the Trump roast. I didn't get to go to New York and actually work with the people.
Yeah.
I worked with Jeff Ross on that directly, just him and I.
Yeah.
And he had an unbelievable set. And it was, you know, that was really, that roast started the uptick for roasts, I do believe. That was really when it started going, like, it became like a Super Bowl instead of a smaller event. Yeah. So
that Rob Lowe one was something else with Ann Coulter. That was just...
You know, I asked for her specifically. I specifically...
Did you?
They go, we just booked Ann Coulter. I go, that's my ace right there. I want Ann Coulter. She's going to kill. It's going to be amazing. And she's the first person to ever basically take a script that I've written and just say, you know, I'm going to go a different direction. I go, no. You're going to kill. You know, all you have to do is read that.
Right,
it's going to be in a big teleprompter. You just read it nice and slow. Pretend like you're cool. You're going to come out like a star. Like, I don't really get the jokes. It's really not my thing. I don't really want to be, I don't really want to make fun of myself first. Like, I want to just like be mean to these people and get this. And she did. She bombed terribly.
Big time.
Yeah, it was horrendous.
Whose joke was it that night? Somebody said, if Ann Coulter is here, who is keeping crows away from the crops?
Remember that? I think that was Pete Davidson.
It was Pete Davidson.
That was very funny.
It's very funny. I'm close to maybe getting on those. I just got to roast Snoop a few weeks ago for a different thing altogether. That's on YouTube.
Did Tony even know it was happening? Tony Hinchcliffe roast Snoop.
He does. He's the smartest, coolest guy. You would be shocked at how awesome Snoop is. And it's just amazing. I made fun of him. You know, he has a new cooking show with Martha Stewart.
Yeah. What a great combo, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
It's finally, after being nominated 17 times, he finally has a Grammy he can work with. I go, it's true. He has a cooking show with Martha Stewart. When asked what it's like to work with a 75-year-old lady, Martha said, not that bad.
Very funny. A week or so ago, they put out a list of the 50 best comics of all time. Rolling Stone did this.
Yeah.
On the list is a guy named Patrice O'Neill, who I think a lot of people might not be sure of who it is. And I know him primarily from those Comedy Central roasts.
Yeah.
Did you get to work at all with Patrice O'Neill before he died?
I did not get to work with Patrice O'Neill, but I will tell you this, is that he was on the Charlie Sheen roast, which is the number one most watched roast of all time, which I'm sure Donald Trump's head would explode if he found that out.
I think we need to look at the numbers again. I don't believe those numbers. Mine has to be number one, the best of all time.
I've ever.
But the big one was Sheen coming off of all of his crazy stuff. And I didn't really know Patrice O'Neill at the time. He was the king of New York, and I was a young L.A. comic. And that roast took place in L.A., and Patrice was the last one to go up. Tough position in the roast. Usually held for Jeffrey Ross or a Lampanelli or the late, great Greg Giraldo. I mean, you really got to come in strong if you're pulling in the heat at the end. It's a position where you get to make fun of everything that has happened that night. And if you're a master improviser, you can really steal the show. And what Patrice did that night was unbelievable. I think everybody was done. I think there was a celebrity that went on before him, maybe Mike Tyson or Steve-O or something like that. And everybody was just like, all right, we've reached our maximum Sheen jokes. What time's the after party? And you can really, in Hollywood, you really feel the people waiting for the after party. You see them just putting on, tightening up their boots and ready to go, not paying any attention to what's going on. Cut to ladies and gentlemen, Patrice O'Neill. And I remember, I'll never forget. I mean, it's just the sight of me sitting in the back of that room watching spit takes in the air like fireworks, just pop, pop, pop.
Yeah.
And people literally falling out of their chair. Not joke fall, like, oh, like, and people, like, in pain, holding their back and the front at the same time. And I was like, wow.
He's that good.
Ever this guy, like, he just had it, man. Yeah. He had it all the way. Pure comedian.
The only thing I had a hard time with was on a couple of the roasts that Patrice O'Neill was on. People knew that he was sick, and they really took gouges of the fact that he may not be around much longer, and then he wasn't. He died very soon after.
Yeah.
That's hard to watch sometimes.
Yeah. As long as Patrice is laughing at it, it's okay.
Then it's all right.
Right. I think he knew. I mean, Patrice knew what he was doing, eating some ice cream at night and whatnot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think he played right into it. And he has such a great sense of humor. And you have to when you're that type of comedian that he lit up everybody his whole life. So,
very funny.
You know, he can take a joke on what people were making fun of him about. He's the same guy that I think threw a phone book at Kevin Hart when he was starting out. And that's Kevin's short. So if Patrice is fat, he's going to get those jokes. So I think he gets it.
I was just looking on Patrice O'Neill's website, and they're making a documentary. It's currently in the works. And there is a benefits memorial in New York City Center. It just happened. So hopefully we'll see that. They're bringing back... a web series, the Patrice O'Neill Show. It's revamped and coming back. Yeah. I'm not that familiar with him, so I got to watch that.
He's really funny.
Yeah. Monster. Watch Elephant in the Room, one of his specials.
Are you still having fun doing this? This is a good job, isn't it?
I'm having the time of my life. Yeah. It's amazing. I mean, I truly am living my dreams. Just came back from Australia, just roasted Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
You know, I'm touring every weekend. I get to come to Chicago once every 6-7 months now. Zany's is amazing.
Isn't
having
it?
Me back super regularly. Built something really crazy. I think there's only a few tickets left for my 6 shows this weekend, which is crazy to think, because again, I mean, I was just here opening for Jeff Ross, happy to be part of that, and now I'm, you know, out on my own with the Netflix special out there, about to tape another one soon.
Things are good.
Things are great.
What's not to like?
Awesome.
Exactly.
Tony,
One
great
Shot,
to see
by
you.
The way, is the name of your yep. first comedy special on Netflix.
Yep, it's on Netflix, One Shot, and life is good. Thank
good.
You.
Good. We love
everything.
Hearing that. Go see Tony Hinchcliffe. He's appearing at Zany's in Chicago tonight through Sunday. Limited tickets still available. Jump on them now. Go to zanys.com and get yourself some tickets. Thank you so much, Tony. Appreciate it.
Such an honor to be here
again
with you.
Thanks,
guys.
How about
Tony.
That? Thanks. Well, we'll take a quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. So your 11:30 news will take place at, do we know yet?
Well, actually, Kim's going to do the 11:30 news
right.
today. After I offered to do it, she reminded
insisted.
Me that it's her regular newscast.
So let Kim do it. Yeah. All right. That'll be
sorry,
fun.
I know we're never early, so I apologize for that.
It was a rarity, and I think we startled Steve.
I'm sorry I wasn't ready.
You
I
have
was
nothing to apologize for.
Preparing the last of the minute newscast.
Don't worry.
Got to be up to date.
We're yep. talking about the Oscars, one of the two.
It's called the news because it's new.
New.
Mo Ryan joins us right now. Mo Ryan, of course, the fine television critic over at Variety. We've had her on the show before to discuss television with us. How are things, Mo? Everything nice?
Everything is grand, yes.
Good, good. Can I ask, the Academy Awards, we're very excited about it. Sunday night. Is it still as big of a deal as it once was? Is it still one of those things that people will be watching live? They don't DVR it. They watch it while it's happening, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think social media has really driven a lot of that. In terms of being big, like, I look back to years that, like, Titanic was nominated or the Lord of the Rings films. I mean, a lot of the films that are nominated are really great, don't get me wrong, but they're, like, you know, they're not, like, the biggest commercial movies. But I think people want to see people dressed up and see what they say, see if there's any controversies. And honestly, award shows in general, like, sort of behind the scenes in Hollywood, they're very hot tickets. You know, people are paying for top dollar to the rights to various award shows because it does get people to tune in live, and then that drives people watching the commercials live. So that's kind of the name of the game still for a lot of TV networks.
You know what's strange, Mo, is there's a couple channels, most notably E, that do red carpet treatment. And I think their coverage, I'm not exaggerating, I think it starts around noon or 1 o'clock.
It does start
sure.
early.
Yeah. But part of that is, I mean, what I always say about awards is people will just come at me and say, well, it's just stupid, it's all dumb, whatever. Well, sure, but you know what? If it gives promotion to work or films that I think is really good, and they might need the promotional boost and the PR help, that's fine. But also, it's rich people getting dressed up so that I can judge them.
That's really totally it.
They should call it that. That would be a great name for
the
show.
It's a long, cumbersome name, but really it's like, let me judge you, rich people.
That's
really
the only thing I tune in for. And actually, I don't even tune in anymore. I wait till the next day or 5 minutes later when everything's posted on Twitter and on the internet.
Yeah, oh, sure. I'm looking at the dresses on Twitter, you know, even before, and I'm like, oh, girl, what did you, who
what were you
to
thinking?
Why?
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, Wendy mentioned this yesterday a little bit. It makes us miss Joan Rivers more than ever whenever they do those red carpet shows. Yeah.
Yeah, and even Kathy Griffin. I feel like they've kind of neutered anyone who would occasionally say something or do something like goofy or just funny or silly or not. You know, everything is so, like, everyone is, oh, you look perfect, you look amazing, everything is so flattering. I mean, there are some latter-day shows that try to do that kind of fashion police thing, but I think she was definitely at the top of that game.
And the thing with Joan Rivers is you had so much respect for her that you didn't care if she said something
sure.
that wasn't right.
Yeah.
She could get away with it.
Yeah, she would kind of go over a line, but then, you know, she also made fun of herself.
Right.
It wasn't like she felt like, you know, you felt like she viewed herself as being, like, you know, better than everyone.
I miss her
tremendously.
I really do.
So much.
Yeah,
so much.
Of course.
All right. Speaking of saying things that are a little bit controversial, it's probably not fair to ask you because I don't know how up on this you are, but I'm very interested in what's going on with Bill Maher right now. Are you up on the story at all?
Yeah, I am. And I've been following it since sort of the whole thing blew up. And truth be told, I've been following the story of Milo Yiannopoulos, who is this. He calls himself, I think, a provocateur, but I think that's often just a code word for someone who likes to be awful for money. and I I've actually been following his career for years because, you know, there's been various movements, especially online, in which, you know, people are harassed or threats are made and so forth. And he's one of those people that always takes a step back and says, oh, it wasn't my fault or I didn't tell anyone to do anything. But he's definitely led to a lot of divisive and negative things happening online. It was actually banned from Twitter for some remarks and basically actions that led to Leslie Jones and I think others being harassed and made to feel awful, which, you know, so he's one of these people who's really good at getting PR for himself and even got a book deal, which many people objected to, because, you know, he's really peddling, in my view, my personal two cents, he's peddling hate speech.
Yeah.
And that's not a new thing at all. I mean, don't you love these people who come along and say, I'm this person who's new on the scene, willing to speak the truth. And I'm like, you know, the stuff you're saying, it isn't new.
Sure.
So it just really bothered me that, you know, Bill Maher brought him on his show Real Time. And even some of the usual panelists who go on the show wouldn't appear with him. Because I think at a certain point, I believe in free speech, as that's one of Bill Maher's core principles, and I understand that. But at a certain point, when does that cross a line into just giving a platform to hate? And I personally think at some point you got to just draw a line.
And one of his guests, Bill Maher's guests, last weekend, last Friday, canceled saying essentially what you just said.
Yeah.
I don't want to be part of a show that gives a platform to this guy.
Right. And why? I mean, the thing is, you can summarize his beliefs very quickly and very easily. And it's really, to some degree, I think it was about getting publicity for Bill Maher's show. And, okay, mission accomplished, but at what cost? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that it was actually the kind of PR that he ended up wanting, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
But, I mean, I don't know. I don't ever watch Bill Maher. I don't even particularly like him that much. But maybe he was having this guest on so other people could do a point counterpoint kind of thing, because there are people that are in the news for bad things, and sometimes we think, well, that would be an interesting guest.
Right.
Yeah, I understand. And I think, though, with someone who, I mean, there's a difference between someone who has a differing view from you or me or whatever, and can conduct themselves in a way that is kind of a civil conversation, whereas, you know, if you look at the kinds of stories he's written and the kinds of things he's gotten behind the kinds of things he's said, it's really appalling to me that he would get to promote that further. I mean, essentially, it's a branding opportunity for him. It's a way for him to promote his book, which, by the way, his publisher now just turned down because of certain comments that he made, and he lost speaking engagements. But it's interesting to me that where people draw the line. You know what I mean? I think it's, for me, there is a line. There is a line of people that, you know, I would draw it here, maybe you would draw it there, maybe Bill Maher draws it there. But it's interesting to me that when Milo and people like him were harassing women and people of color and LGBT people and anyone who wasn't like them, you know, that was okay for his publisher, and that was okay. Even after, you know, despite all the controversy, it was okay for Bill Maher to have him on his show. I just think, I don't know, there are people I'm sure that Bill won't have on his show. So why, I would love to know more of where that line exists for him. And the thing is, now I see him taking credit for Milo losing his book deal, which I think is not, I think that's giving Real Time more prominence than it really possibly deserves.
Bill Maher is taking credit for that?
Bill Maher is taking credit for it. He said that, you know, his theory is you bring a guy on and just give him a little bit of rope and see how much he can hang himself. And to some extent he did, but now the new twist on this is, after this guy, Milo Yiannopoulos, gets he loses his book deal and he's losing other endorsements and they're really criticizing him. Mm-hmm. Somebody found this tape of Bill Maher from a bunch of years ago commenting about the Mary Kay Letourneau case. She's the teacher who had the affair with the, I think he was a 12 or 13-year-old boy, and Bill Maher is defending that. After Yiannopoulos said he believes that a grown man can have sex with a 13-year-old boy, and he got in trouble, and Bill Maher was all over him for that, then they found this old tape of Bill Maher defending a woman in her 30s having sex with a 12 or 13-year-old boy, and now mm-hmm. he's in trouble for that.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting to me that, you know, I do believe in free speech, but there's also such a thing as hate speech, and where does that line exist? And I think in a way, like, the most amusing thing out of this whole thing for me is that Bill Maher thinks that it was him that lost him the book deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that that's, I think that's giving him, you know, that to me reveals that it's much more about puffing up the brand of his show than it is about anything else, you know, and getting attention for it. But sometimes, as I said, I think that attention comes at a cost.
That's why I'm so not a fan of Bill Maher's at all. I just find him to be very smug and irritating.
Mm-hmm. He can be smug. He, more times than not, is both smug and at times irritating. But more times than not, there's a really nice point that's running through it, you know?
This I don't one, make it to the end to well, get the point.
That's fair.
He's just a tune-out for me.
Yeah. All right, Mo, stay where you are. We've got more with Mo Ryan. Mo, of course, fine television critic over at Variety. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, if you're talking top television critics, the name Mo Ryan will certainly come up. She's the critic over at Variety and appears with us here on the show from time to time. Mo, let's discuss this show Taken that's starting up on NBC. This is mm-hmm. kind of it's the Liam Neeson movie, but in TV form, right?
Exactly. And don't expect to see Liam Neeson on the show.
Oh, all right.
Just FYI, it's basically a version of the character. The actor who plays the Liam Neeson character in this is played by Clive Standen, who, if you ever watched Vikings, which is a History Channel show I actually like, he was on that for a while. So, yeah, it's essentially there's a ton of reboots and remakes, you know, for TV at the moment. There's a version of Lethal Weapon on TV. There's versions of other big movies that have kind of made the jump to TV, Training Day, things like that. So it's a trend that's very much going to keep going. It's gathered steam the last few years, and it's going to keep going. And I actually, you know, I didn't think the first episode was the best installment that I saw, but I thought that as it got going, it's kind of like if you want an action hour, something like The Blacklist or, you know, something like a TV show on Cinemax that I really liked called Strike Back.
Mm-hmm.
There's that kind of show where it's like a team has to do a thing and there's, you know, fights and whatnot. I thought it was pretty good. You know, Jennifer Beals is in it. She's really good. There are some, the cast around the main guy is excellent. So it's that kind of show. It's not like it's going to reinvent the wheel. It's not as good as the movies. But if you like an action hour, I think it's pretty credible.
Now, in the movies, there have been three Taken movies. And by the third one, you go, boy, Liam Neeson's family sure gets kidnapped a lot.
Do not be related to that guy. It's a very bad idea.
But on TV, is it? It's not that guy's daughter getting, his daughter's not kidnapped by different people every week.
Well, no, there's a thing that, I mean, yeah, there's a revenge plot, I'll put it that way. I don't want to give away too much, but there's an ongoing revenge plot. And to be honest with you, I didn't think that that was all that interesting to me. As a sort of mission of the week thing, I thought that stuff was a little bit more intriguing. Mm. I think they've got to sort of pay homage to the movie with that ongoing revenge plot, but I don't, you know, if they do set up a little bit, maybe that'll be more interesting to me. I'll have to see.
All right. That's fair. I was telling Wendy, I watched that show on HBO, Big Little Lies, with mm-hmm. Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon, and I was extremely disappointed in it, but I'm hearing great things. The reviews on it are really good, but for me, it was just women complaining about each other for an hour.
I enjoy that.
Are you all right with that?
Well, here's the thing. The landscape for TV is such that in this year, there's going to be, just in the realm of scripted TV shows, at least 500 shows. So when I began as a critic, there were maybe, I don't know, like 100 and something.
Yeah.
I'd have to go back and look. But it was a lot less. It was at least two-thirds less, like 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So what I think is going on is, like, there's just a lot of different subgenres. You know what I mean? There's a, like, there's a category for everyone, and there's, you know, there's shows for everyone. I mean, it can be a little overwhelming to know, like, what's good, what you might like, what out there is good, which is why, you know, read me or read other critics. You know, yeah. We can kind of give you some pointers. But I actually think it's kind of a good thing that, you know, I think Big Little Lies is a show that's going to appeal to a subset of people. There's another show coming out soon called Feud, which is Susan Sarandon and Jessica Lange playing Joan Crawford and Betty
Davis.
That
looks awesome.
Yeah,
can I just tell you that?
It's so fun. Let me tell you. I really enjoyed it. And it's really for people who love old Hollywood, who love those stories about those iconic actresses. And, you know, it really gets into the problems that they face and their challenges. And it's fun. It's both fun and kind of an intriguing history lesson for me. So the thing is, like, I've actually talked to other critics or people who've seen it. It doesn't come out till March 4th. And it's one of those shows where either you're on board or you're not. And I think that there's more shows like that. There's more shows where it's like, okay, you either fully like that kind of thing or mostly like that kind of thing, or it's just not your cup of tea, you know? And
yeah.
and I guess I can't view that as a bad thing, although it means that I can never sleep because there's just too many shows.
Come on, sleep's overrated. You don't need
sleep
to sleep.
What is that?
Come on.
Who needs it? Only babies need sleep.
Right.
I got to ask you how Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon's portrayal of the lovely ladies, is it a good one?
I really think so. I mean, I think that they really get at, I mean, what you wouldn't want is for them to just kind of do an impression of them or try to imitate them just physically. I think they really try to get at the core of the actresses, and I think in that regard, they get there really well. And I think especially with Joan Crawford, I think, you know, in pop culture, she's kind of regarded as a joke because her daughter's book and was turned into a movie, you know, Mommy Dearest, and it's this campy kind of insane, you know, movie. And, you know, I'm not saying that she was a saint. She may have drank a little too much. She may
yeah.
have been a little bit too out there at times, but I think that the cool thing about this is that if it was just a movie about the making of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, which is what the TV show Feud dwells on to some degree, it would have to be superficial. But I think they've got 8 episodes, so they can kind of get into it more and give you more of a sense of what struggles that they had to overcome. And, you know, they did fight. They did have sort of like a juicy, I don't know, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills kind of, you know.
The original, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So so I think that these actresses are so good that they allow you to see different layers of them and not just the sort of tabloid version.
I can't wait.
You know how when Psycho came out, people for the next 10 or 15 or 20 years said, boy, every time I look in the shower, I think about Psycho. I'm like that with Wire Hangers and Mommy Dearest. I've not
of
touched
course.
A wire hanger in 30 years where I don't think about that book.
I know, right?
Mo, always fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for your insight. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Have a great
Do
weekend.
Thanks, Warren.
Mo Ryan, television critic for Variety. Go to Variety.com and you can read her there. We'll take a quick break and then more show Bill and Wendy WGN.
Thank you, Kim. Kim, I'm glad you're here because in the news I heard this. I don't know this particular report, but I've been hearing it. State Representative LaShawn Ford wants to rename almost 300 miles of Interstate 55 for former President Barack Obama.
We've been hearing that, yeah.
That's interesting.
I'm all for this, you guys.
Will they wait until he turns 55 to make it a special
he's
occasion?
He's not 55 yet?
No, not yet.
No, I think he's 54,
yeah.
53.
Yep. Soon to be 55.
We can't have our president so young. That bothers me.
I will. The day that a president is younger than me, were you working with me when James Bond was younger than me for the first time?
No.
That was very hurtful, the fact that James Bond was younger than me. But yeah, as soon as we get a president that's younger than us,
well, Kanye,
all bets are off.
You're going to have to wait at least 3 and something
right,
years.
Right.
Well, Interstate 55 would turn into the Barack Obama Expressway between Cook County and East St. Louis if this new bill in the Illinois General Assembly passes. As I mentioned, State Representative LaShawn Ford on Wednesday announced that he was introducing legislation that would rename the expressway. He says renaming I-55 for President Barack Obama would not only be an honor for America's 44th president, but it will be the right measure we should approve for Illinois' very own state senator and U.S. senator. I'm all for this.
Sounds like a decent idea. Why not?
I know there are people that weren't fond
right,
of President Obama. I'm just going to call him Obama now.
But no matter what highway you're on, if it's named for the Eisenhower or the Kennedy or the Bormann, I know you're not a fan of Bormans.
Wasn't a big fan. You're right.
Or the Jane Byrne.
The Jane Byrne.
And that was just the Circle Interchange turned to the Jane Byrne Interchange. It should be.
Right.
In the vernacular in your head won't. I still call it Comiskey Park.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the Sears Tower.
Right.
So
right.
It won't change in your mind, but it's just the right thing to do.
So whenever there's traffic, are people going to say, thanks, Obama?
Yes.
Every time.
See, and that's perfect. Kevin, that was a good one. You should just go home now.
We'll blame the traffic on Barack Obama every time.
Thanks, Obama.
That's what it should be called, the Thanks Obama Highway. I know it's going to cost more for the lettering, but it's worth it.
I enjoy that immensely. The House is also considering a measure introduced by Representative Robert Martwick to rename 294 Tri-State in honor of Obama. It's obviously one or the other.
No, you can't have both. We can't name all of our streets after Barack Obama. That would water it down.
It would. I do like that. Thanks, Obama.
Governor's Highway should take that route if you're going to a prison of some sort. Governor's Highway should only lead to prisons.
Like Governor.
Shouldn't go anywhere else.
Oh, I guess.
Because
so many of
our governors end up in jail. That should be the automatic route if you're going to a jail, would be Governor's Highway.
That's hateful.
I should apologize.
No, you shouldn't.
I'm not going to, but I should.
East of the Tri-State Tollway, I-55 was named the Stevenson Expressway in 1960.
After McLean Stevenson.
No, but they are related. Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson, weren't they related?
I think they are related, yeah.
In 1965, a month and a half after the death of former Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson, it was named for him near the I-270 and I-70 split. I-55 is named for another former U.S. Senator, Paul Simon. No, it isn't. It's not the Simon. Simon Says, go this way.
What is it?
Between Springfield and St. Louis, the expressway is named after the Vince DiMuzio Expressway for former state senator Vince DiMuzio.
Now, can I ask you, yesterday we did a story about how they have quickly changed a law because by Trump Tower, there's that street is it Trump Avenue or Trump Street or something?
Trump Plaza.
It's honorary.
The honorary it's Trump honorary. Plaza with the brown signs.
All right. So they said that from now on, you can't have any kind of a street that is named after a living person. So doesn't that affect Barack Obama and naming some highway after him? He's still alive. So doesn't that cancel it out?
Forgive me for not knowing this. Two things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
U.S. Senator Paul Simon, is he still alive?
No.
Okay.
He's no longer alive.
And where is the part of I-55 named after Paul Simon? I don't know that.
I'm not sure I know that. I don't know.
All right. That's a great question. So you think the person, it has to be posthumous.
I'm almost positive that that we did the story yesterday about.
But that's the honorary.
So they can name, I guess, maybe that's the codicil in the law, is if the person is alive, they can name a regular street or a highway after him.
Because Jane Byrne was still alive or had just passed away when that was renamed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, Stuart. How are you?
Fine. I agree with you. I don't think it should be given out. I mean, the guy just left office, and I think that should be something very special. And I don't think we should wait till he dies.
Right.
I think there should be a law or a rule where you're able to do that within a reasonable amount of time.
So maybe it's just too soon, like we shouldn't do it just yet.
Yeah, I don't think it's appropriate to do that right now. I just think that it takes away from what it really should mean then to people.
But why wait? If somebody has done something that stands out, and you don't think so?
No, I'm sorry. I think we need to see more of his legacy, more positive things that were done during his administration come to fruition so that, you know, there's a little bit more meat to it, so to speak, as opposed to him just leaving the presidency and now being named in his honor because he's from the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago.
But odds are he probably won't achieve anything as great as, I mean, once he's you're the president,
president
of the U.S., it's hard to top that. I don't know what else he could do that would tip it in.
No, that's what I'm saying. To just give him a little more notoriety for things that he has done that maybe not everybody's aware of at this point in time.
I think everything he's done will be repealed in the next few years. don't you?
Well, some of which is not such a bad idea, I think. But that's another story.
Okay, so it sounds like you weren't a fan of his. Are you saying that for this reason? Because if you're not a...
No, not at all. I'm an independent, and I've voted for both Democrats and Republicans. I will say this, that this last go-around, I probably leaned more towards Republican. And Harry Reid had everything in the world to do with that. I just thought the man was just totally unprofessional. And to have him as a leader of the Senate was just a joke in my mind. And it's too bad because I think he injured the Democratic Party.
All right. Well, Stuart, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Stuart. Have a good weekend.
Take care. You too.
All right. Oops, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Stuart. He was saying you too. I'll just translate.
All right.
Frank is on the line. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Wendy. How you doing?
Good.
I think, and Bill, I think the law that you guys referred to is passed by the city council.
Yes.
Which would only affect Chicago streets. It has nothing to do outside the
city. Oh, all right. That makes sense.
So highways that come under actually, you know, would be under state or actually federal highways.
Yeah, I guess it would. Okay, that makes perfect sense. I don't know why I didn't put that together. Thank you, Frank.
No problem.
Thanks.
All right. And I was questioning where the Paul Simon Expressway is near the I-270 and I-70 split. I-55 is named for former U.S. Senator Paul Simon. And Linda, you know about this?
I do, because my parents live in St. Louis and I've been driving that stretch for the last 34 plus years. And there's a little sign, and it's got a little bow tie on it for him. And I just think of that every time I pass it. So I see it.
And what does it say?
I think it literally just says the Paul Simon Expressway. I don't know if it says memorial on it, but
really?
it definitely says Paul Simon, and it's got the bow tie.
You know how the interchanges on most highways are cloverleaf shaped? His should be like a bow tie. Wouldn't that be nice?
All right. Well, thank you for clearing that up, because I guess I haven't been down I-55 that far.
I could drive it in my sleep. But
Well, don't.
No, that's not safe.
Thank you, Linda.
Bye, Linda.
Thank you.
We have to take a break, and we have some comments and maybe questions. Obama Expressway, what do you think? 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about a proposed roadway. Would they call it the Barack Obama Highway?
Barack Obama Expressway.
Expressway.
It'll run between Cook County and East St. Louis.
All the exits would be on the left. You can only exit to the left.
I get really confused when the exits are on the left. If you're on the Eisenhower and you exit at Harlem, it just can, you know,
right. It's confusing.
It shouldn't be that way.
Sure.
I know you know in advance, but then all of a sudden you find yourself in an exit-only lane.
I get it.
And this was proposed by State Representative LaShawn Ford. And we had mentioned that a part of I-55 near the I-270 and I-70 split is named after the former U.S. Senator Paul Simon, which I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was Linda who called in and someone texted us a picture. And it's just your green sign that says Paul Simon Freeway.
Not Highway.
Which that confuses me because this is in California.
Yeah, that's more of a West Coast term.
We don't say freeway here.
Every once in a while, you'll hear somebody say it, and it's jolting, because we do tend to say highway over freeway.
Or expressway.
Or expressway, yeah.
So Paul Simon Freeway, and there is a giant bow tie on it, which is really
cute.
Oh, that's
nice. What a nice tribute.
So what do you think? Do you think we should honor this president or not? And I think it depends whether or not you were a fan of his.
I'm positive.
All right, Steve, what do you think about this?
I think the state has no money, and that's going to cost money. If they could balance the budget, then maybe they could start writing checks again, but we can't pay the debts we have.
That's true.
I do get that, but all it's going to take are just a few signs.
You say that, but in the world of politics, what is that going to run, $300,000, $400,000? It's insane.
And then you got a four-man crew putting up each sign, too. You got to remember that.
One day of work. You know. Not even a full day. Remember, I was telling...
talking about the state of Illinois.
Yeah,
we're
okay.
About highway workers, okay? I drive a truck. They should name it after me. I've got more miles on it than he does.
I'm all for it, the Steve Expressway.
I like
exactly
it.
Exactly right.
Thank you, Steve.
I'm on the Steve. How long did it take you? I'm on the
Too
Steve.
Too close to the Stevenson, though.
Yeah, I guess.
So he should, if he's on the Stevenson, he should just say, I'm on the Steve.
Right.
All right. And our last caller before the break was talking about maybe wait until President Barack Obama's legacy settles in a little bit. Cheryl, you have thoughts about that?
Well, my only thought was when Bill had said that normally a person does greater things while they're in office than out. And I think an argument could be made that Jimmy Carter was as great a statesman as as great a humanitarian after he got out of office.
100% right.
He was a statesman when he was in office. So that was my only thought.
Yeah, I agree with you.
How about put it up now, and if he doesn't do anything better, we take it down.
Repeal it.
Good point.
That'll cost more money, like Steve just said. So now we got to decide.
Right. It gets
right.
tough.
Thank you, Cheryl. And Brad wants to jump in on this, too. Brad, your thoughts on the Obama Expressway?
Well, I mean, to wait and I didn't vote for him, so let's start with that. So I wasn't a fan of his. But on the other hand, you know, unlike what was happening earlier in the week where they were doing the not my president day, the man was my president. So I think that, you know, I didn't vote for him, but he was my president, too. So I think that his legacy is he was one of 45 presidents
right.
of the United States. I don't know what more you could do for a legacy than be the president of the United States.
Yep.
Whether his policies were good or bad, kind of irrelevant. He was the president of the United States.
I totally agree. Yeah.
We were talking, Bill and I were talking off the air. Remember all the electronic tollway when I-Pass happened and the Rod Blagojevich tollway plaza? Those signs were everywhere, and it wasn't just one or two. They were huge,
right.
and they were everywhere. And boy, did those go down quickly.
The next day,
yeah.
when he was out of office, the next day.
You remember those, Brad?
I do, but I will say one thing. I do think that Steve probably, not that we would name it the Steve Highway, but I think that Steve had a very good point.
Which was what?
It will cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to make the signs, to have the contracts, to put the signs up. This will cost a lot of money. And so if we can't balance the budget, maybe now's not the time. I don't say it's not the time for... because he doesn't deserve it. It's just maybe not the time because we don't have the money to do it.
That's sensible.
Good point.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brad.
Bye, Brad. Brad should have a highway, too. Everyone should have their own highway.
Well, it's funny you say that because, Dan, you have exactly that question. Everyone should have a highway, correct?
Well, exactly. If we name it Obama for 355 miles and maybe every other expressway is named for somebody now, you know, I'm thinking, what happens if the next five presidents come from Illinois and senators like Dick Durbin, he's going to want a highway probably. Are we going to, like, start chopping off 10 miles of Obama to give to Durbin?
That's a great question.
Who gets what? So, you know, I think there ought to be a limit. Everybody gets 5 or 10 miles and, you know, we wait for the next guy.
Do you think there are going to be more presidents coming from Chicago, from Illinois?
Absolutely.
You do?
Who knows? I'm just saying, plan ahead.
All right, I like that too. Dan, you're a thinker, okay. aren't you?
Absolutely.
Thanks,
have a great weekend.
We've had a pretty good run. I mean, if you look at, we've had Lincoln, we've had Reagan, we've had Obama. That's not bad. That's not terrible.
What about Rahm Emanuel? What if he runs for president?
I know it's come up in the past.
Yeah.
I can't speak for him. I don't know if it's the top of his priority list. There was a time where I would have said he seems to be heading in that direction. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder now.
I don't know.
We should have him on and
all right.
talk to him.
We can do
or
that.
Patty can ask him at 2 in the morning.
Right. I don't know. The more I think about it, the waiting period that was discussed earlier doesn't make that much sense to me. You know, every once in a while, there will be a guy. Here's an example. Do you remember Thurman Munson, great catcher for the New York Yankees? He died in an airplane crash. A lot of people said immediately after he died, let's forego that waiting period. I think a baseball player has to be out of baseball for 5 years before he's considered in the Hall of Fame. And everybody around baseball is like, let's just put Thurman Munson in now. Well, what are we waiting for? He deserves it, you know? I don't think there'll be a rash of people if they gave Barack Obama a stretch of roadway. All of a sudden, the floodgates wouldn't open and everybody on the planet wouldn't go, hey, what about that guy? What about that guy? What about that guy? It doesn't work that way, does it?
No, and I don't believe in waiting for things. I want things now.
Enjoy it while you can.
But seriously, what right. is the waiting going to do other than waiting for money to pay for it?
Yeah, that's the problem, I guess. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks to everyone who weighed in on this, and we'll see what happens. We'll keep you posted on the Barack Obama Expressway between Cook County and East St. Louis. if this new bill in the Illinois General Assembly passes. Right now, shall we give something away?
Yes.
This too shall pass.
Yes.
We will pass out a Firehouse Subs gift card right here, right now. You pick the number, caller, and tell them how to call.
I would like you to be caller 10, not caller 9, not caller 11. You must be caller number 10 at 312-981-7200. If you are caller 10, well, then you win.
A Firehouse Subs gift card. And if you don't win, wait again next week. We'll be giving you a chance to win. Ask for the Bill and Wendy special. You'll get the make your own sub. You can build a medium sub with one of your favorite meats, either turkey, ham, or roast beef, fully loaded with your choices of sides, lettuce, tomato, mayo, mustard. Of course, you get that pickle spear on the side as well. It's the make your own sub Bill and Wendy special, only $4.99. Find a Firehouse Sub near you at firehousesubs.com. Firehouse Subs, the hero of all subs. Shall we congratulate our winner?
No.
Okay. We'll be back with Steve Burchett. No, Warren from Elmwood Park has just walked away with our Firehouse Subs gift card.
I like to build suspense. I'm like the modern day Alfred Hitchcock, but it is Warren, so congrats. We'll talk to Steve next, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thank you. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. It's part two of our Friday show. It just occurred to me, we're not going to be able to say that for too much longer.
Oh, yeah, we're not going to have a second half.
10 more afternoon versions of our show after today.
Well, 9, because we're both not going to be here
Monday
afternoon. All right, Monday
afternoon. We can't do the second half. Right.
I'm giving you an exam. That's why we
right.
can't.
That's right. It's state-mandated exam that you're giving me on Monday. But then when that's all done, yeah, we're down to 9 just after today, afternoon shows. Although we'll still be on what the kids like to call the stream. So get yourself some wading boots and listen to us from noon to 1 in a couple of weeks.
That's going to be really easy to listen to, and we will have someone on to explain it to us so we can then tell you. No, actually, you go to WGNradio.com, and you will click on the stream. There will be WGN Plus.
It'll be easy.
They really will.
They told us it'll be very easy.
And I have the old WGN app.
You do?
Yes. Because
how old? When you say the old app,
well,
like, could you hear Wally Phillip on it? Wally
no.
Phillips, is he on there?
Wow, no. He would have liked that.
Yes.
But it's real easy. We'll tell you how to do it, and that'll be from noon to 1.
Mm-hmm. And that starts 2 weeks from Friday. No, 2 weeks from Monday. 2 weeks from Monday.
How about just, let's say, March 13th?
March 13th, for people who are rich enough to get a calendar.
You still have a calendar that you write things on, don't you?
Yeah, the Blackhawks calendar.
I have that same one.
Yeah.
It's hanging up in my kitchen. When I was a good mom, I used to put all the things that we had scheduled, and then that got really old, so I really only use it when I give Tiki his heartworm medication. I put a little sticker on the day so I know I've done it, and I just did it today, and I try and do it the same time every month. That's the only thing I use it for now.
You know, it's fun if you use the Blackhawks calendar. You can write on any given day, you go, oh, look, I have to pick up my dry cleaning, and it's Nicholas Chalmerson's birthday, because all their birthdays are listed.
I've sent them all cards.
They appreciate that.
Patrick Kane should get 3 cards in a row.
Oh,
how about
it?
First,
what a night.
Jonathan Toews does some amazing stuff.
Right?
And I don't know, is it just me, or it just seems like he peaks towards the end of the season. He lets the youngsters have some fun, and then he puts it into full force.
He seems to be at his best when he's needed.
Yep.
Right?
And then
the history of that.
So Jonathan Toews doing some action 2 games ago, and then Patrick Kane pulling it out
that
big
time. That was fun.
Oh.
That was fun.
Although I always worry when they start getting a ton of goals that they're going to beat Grant Mulvey's record.
I thought about that yesterday.
Yes.
Like, if I was Grant Mulvey, you'd watch the game with a little added
don't
interest.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Grant is such a nice man
I think he wants somebody to do it.
I think he does.
But he's held that record for quite some time.
35 years and 1 week.
You're like the Rain Man lately.
I'm Hockey Rain Man. Ice Man.
Right.
It can't be Rain Man
I'll
in
call
hockey.
You
all right. This.
Speaking of sports.
I want to make note of the fact that, and this is a difficult story to report on because I'm not positive who's in the right and who's in the wrong.
I agree with you.
All right. For people who don't know, Mark Giangreco, who I would say
is handsome.
Well, that's a given. Mark Giangreco is handsome. That's not even opinion. That's fact.
Legend.
He is a legend. I think he's one of our city's finest sportscasters.
I agree.
I think if you were building a Mount Rushmore of Chicago sportscasters present day, Mark Giangreco's face would easily be on that Mount Rushmore.
And Tim Weigel.
Tim Weigel for sure.
Who else? Only two heads?
Boy, now after those two, there's a bunch more that are really good.
Bill Frink.
Bill Frink from Channel 7.
Yeah, you do. Okay, so we have three heads.
Wendell Smith.
Don't know who that is.
Do you know who that is, Steve? That's from our childhood.
I don't. Kind of sounds familiar.
Channel 9 had a sports guy named Wendell Smith who came from the world of scouting. He was a baseball scout and then also did sports on Channel 9. He was outstanding. He had a lot of good insights into baseball. There's a lot. Johnny and Jeannie Morris. Certainly.
Oh, that's now we're done.
Wouldn't you put them in there?
Yeah, I don't know about the guy you said because
Wendell Smith.
Yeah,
it is mid-60s. It was a long time ago.
All right, so Mark Giangreco, Tim Weigel, Bill Frink. Are we putting him on
I
there?
I like Bill Frink. And then Johnny and Jeannie Morris would share one head.
No, they can't do that. They're divorced. They got a divorce.
It's the married version of them, so they could share a head.
God, they were something, weren't they?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Loved them.
Over
All right,
Channel
there's
2.
Our Mount Rushmore. We will pitch that in instead of the Obama Expressway.
Right, right. And I'm pretty sure the Friends of the Park will give us their okay. Almost positive they will.
Friends of no one.
All right, so Mark Giangreco is being suspended from Channel 7.
Without pay. Those are the key phrases.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Oh, yes.
That's serious.
I know.
I didn't know that. I just thought it's one of those things where they go, hey, why don't you lay low for a week?
Multi-week and without pay.
Oh, I don't like that. All right, let me read you the story. This is from our friend Rob Feeder. WLS Channel 7 has slapped sports anchor Mark Giangreco with a multi-week suspension for a tweet in which he called President Donald Trump a, and I quote here, cartoon lunatic, and referred to Trump voters as, again, I'm quoting, simpletons. Management of the top-rated ABC-owned station released the following statement on Thursday. Here's what ABC said, Channel 7, WLS. Mark Giangreco's Twitter comments are not in line with ABC 7 Chicago's nonpartisan editorial standards. We have reviewed the matter, and we are taking the appropriate action. An ABC 7 spokeswoman, who would not elaborate on any of the actions, said, sources said Giangreco would also be suspended without pay, as you pointed out, for multiple weeks, and all this will start on Monday. Reached on Thursday, Giangreco declined to comment.
Don't blame him.
Yeah. I don't think you want to.
Don't
then
talk
you run,
now.
Then you run the risk of getting in deeper.
Yep.
If you say, come on, it's America. I can say what I want. Then Channel 7 goes, oh, our meeting's not over. Come on back in.
Then it's multi-month without pay, not multi-week.
Right. I bet you're right.
This is harsh.
His agent, Joel Weissman, also refused to comment.
Smart move.
The controversy began last Sunday when Giangreco reacted to a tweet by Bruce Arthur. Bruce Arthur is a sports columnist for the Toronto Star. He wrote, Bruce Arthur wrote, Donald Trump, a hateful, ignorant, corrupt simpleton supported by 87% of Republicans. In reply, Giangreco tweeted, so obvious, so disturbing, America exposed as a country full of simpletons who followed this cartoon lunatic to be elected. Elected is in quotes. Giangreco later deleted the post, but not before it was picked up by Chicago City Wire, a website associated with conservative talk show host Dan Proft, who is a Good. Morning personality over at Salem Media. That's WIND, Windy 560.
Kudos to Dan Proft for having his little watchdog group going on.
But isn't that, couldn't you say that's something of a conflict of interest?
Yes. It's the competition. Well, it isn't really.
It
really isn't.
It's
TV,
it's
radio. It's
not direct competition, but it's kind of strange that someone in the media, I guarantee you, now, I don't get to listen to Dan Proft with any regularity, but I guarantee you he has said some extremely pro-Trump things.
Absolutely.
Right?
Just knowing him.
So.
You're a brother in broadcasting. I mean.
Right.
In television, I think it's all under the same umbrella.
Right.
Again, right. There's just so much hatred and tattletaling.
So, I guess this is the question. Is Channel 7 right with suspending Mark Giangreco for speaking his mind?
For calling his audience simpletons?
Not his audience.
Well, he did, though. That's the problem.
See, that is the problem. And
I mean, I love Mark, right?
I do, too.
You understand why the bosses would say, I don't know about multi-weeks, but that's why they would say you can't, you know.
You just referred to some of our viewers as simpletons, right?
Not I'm sure he would agree with that, too. I mean, you know, looking back at it, it's like, yeah, that's probably
Although,
not the right.
In Illinois, don't you think we have more people that supported Hillary Clinton?
I don't know. Read my email.
I'm being very
Chicago,
careful here.
Well, the state certainly went Hillary Clinton's way, but if you're looking demographics, certainly in Chicago, they're
And it's not okay to ridicule just
a small
part of your audience.
I get it.
Yeah,
right. I get it.
Right.
But I, you know, I wouldn't do it because I'm a big baby. And I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I do not like the character of the man. We are talk show hosts, so technically we do not have to remain biased.
Right.
Unbiased.
We can remain biased.
You must remain biased.
Well, we not must, but sometimes it's hard for me to bite my tongue. I have holes in it.
You have a great point, though. I would love to go through some of the things that other radio host has said about Obama or his voters.
Right.
Well, and the reason
I bet they stand up pretty well with what Mark tweeted.
I'm positive.
Yeah. See? And that's what I mean. It doesn't seem fair, although he is not like... If he had his own talk show or... I feel that would be different than... Technically, he's been hired to be the sports dude.
But he didn't do this on air.
Yeah, but his name is so synonymous with where
Channel
he
7.
Works because he's so famous.
Hmm.
So it does...
He is certainly representative of WLS television, but he did this on his own. I don't know if in the tweet... Is he identified... Like, I'm not on Twitter, so I don't know how this works. Does it say your name and affiliation? I mean, it obviously says your name, but does it say Mark Giangreco, and then underneath
ABC
it say,
News,
you know, from Channel 7? Does it say that?
Let me find him. You can continue talking.
I don't think that would be a...
But it's still, he's synonymous with it because he's
there
very
a lot
well
of guys,
known.
A lot of people put on their Twitter feed, you know, opinions expressed are mine and not...
Right.
But I don't think that will give. I don't think it would give me cover.
But
or you
right,
cover.
But look at what's going on at WLS. I mean,
it says ABC7 sports anchor, ESPN radio contributor, hockey geek, classic muscle car freak, R&B lover, closet cartoonist. Which is weird because he used cartoon
in
his tweet.
He mentioned cartoon.
So
makes him an expert.
It's his private account.
He should be rewarded.
Even though it's his private account, first thing out of there, ABC7 sports anchor.
It mentions his affiliation.
And usually that's what you do because you want...
It's credibility.
Yeah.
Sure.
Or just, so, you know, in case people are wondering, he does have the check mark, so that means it's verified.
Right. So you think it's okay, if you're WLS, to suspend him without pay?
I think it's
right?
A little harsh, if you want to know the truth. A multi-week without pay.
Yeah.
I understand how a company would say...
You've gone over the line?
Well, yeah, because you're representing us. I can understand that. I'm not saying I agree with it.
Yeah.
I just bet Mark is going to be much more careful with his tweets.
Right. Now, I have to say this about him. Actually, let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll discuss this further. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. Is WLS, Channel 7... within their rights to say to Mark Giangreco, sit on the bench for a couple of weeks. You're not getting paid. What you did was out of line. Or are they not? We're at 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Let me quickly catch you up. Mark Giangreco, the lovable sportscaster over at ABC 7, is in some hot water because he jumped on one of those Twitter trains. A guy from the Toronto Sun, a man named Bruce Arthur, tweeted, Donald Trump, a hateful, arrogant, corrupt simpleton, supported by 87% of Republicans, to which our friend Mark Giangreco tweeted, so obvious, so disturbing, America exposed as a country full of simpletons who allowed this cartoon lunatic to be elected in quotes. ABC7's move to suspend Mark Giangreco for a couple of weeks, no pay. Our question to you is, justified or not justified?
I really can see... ABC7's reasoning for this. I just feel like it's a very strict penalty.
Would you agree with me that Mark is one of those guys that even though he does a great job of doing the sports, his added dimension is his sense of humor, right?
And his snarkiness is why we kind of have grown to love
sure.
him.
And sometimes, I think he'd be the first to admit, sometimes he has gone over the line. There's a couple of very notable cases, and you know, he's taken his slams for that. But if you're going to be cutting edge at all, every once in a while, something's going to happen that might be a little controversial.
All right. Well, Brian wants to chime in. Hi, Brian.
Hey, guys.
What
I'm one
think,
of the
Brian?
Simpletons.
You're one of the simpletons.
Yeah, simpletons. Yeah, one of the deplorables.
All right. That's fine.
I think it's too much.
To suspend them?
That Mark was, yeah, that's too much. We're big boys. We can handle it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So you like Mark Giangreco.
Yeah, absolutely, but right. I don't have to watch him anymore.
No, well, but would you stop watching him over this? I hope you wouldn't.
No, of course not.
But
I think it's going too far with the nitpicking and the tattletaling, as you guys said before.
It does seem like everybody hates everybody and tattles on each other.
Yeah.
I'm a simpleton. I admit it. I can handle it.
Thank you, Brian.
We appreciate it. All right. Linda wants to voice her opinion. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
Just real quick, I do believe it's justified. And the reason I say that is because if this had been said against President Obama and his supporters, people probably would have called it racist and said that he should be fired. I just feel there's a double standard a lot of times in place. And as far as Illinois going for Hillary Clinton, that is true. However, if you look at the map, it was only Cook County and two other counties that went Democrat. The rest of the state was total red, went Republican.
Right.
Yeah, so...
Well, thank you for clearing that up.
Okay, well, so, you guys take care. Thank you.
So does that figure in to the reach of Channel 7? Like, they're broadcast, you know, basically in Chicago and the outlying areas. I'm not positive how far the signal goes, but I am positive that it travels to places that would swing more to the Republican side, to the Democrat side. So is Channel 7 taking that into account?
I don't know. And I was really bothered when Hillary Clinton said deplorables. You got to watch what you say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously.
And she quickly apologized for that.
Yeah, but it's already out there.
Not that I need to be an apology apologist, but she did apologize.
And
for
I agree,
that.
But you know what? That's something that probably shouldn't have been said in the first place.
Right.
I know we sometimes put our foot in our mouth. I do it more than anyone.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're in that kind of position, you got to be careful. Andrew, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to talk to you as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
So, I mean, it might be a little aggressive of a punishment, but I do think it's justified in that, you know, as a persona on Twitter, you can assume he gained most of those followers because of his affiliation and his being known. And I got to kind of point out the irony in the fact that, you know, he's being held accountable for something he said on his personal while critiquing somebody that might go one way or the other. But it was critiquing President Trump, who is kind of known for using his personal Twitter account and having that be a reflection of the White House, even though it's the personal Twitter account of the president saying a lot of stuff.
That's a good point. I wonder if Donald Trump retweeted or tweeted back to Mark Giangreco.
To Mark Giangreco? I don't know.
I mean, it was deleted, and I don't know if it's because ABC told Mark to take it down or if he just said, you know what? On second thought, maybe I don't want that up there.
Yeah, you got to be careful with Twitter because you have to know, or, you know, social media, you got to know your audience, whether, you know, it's right or wrong that you say something, but it's, you got to know the audience and how it's going to be construed.
Without
and
a doubt.
You.
Andrew, what about this? Can't you see, if Mark Giangreco said this during a broadcast, if he was on Channel 7 and he throws that out during a broadcast, then I say,
fire him.
Yeah, what are you doing? You can't do that during the broadcast. But on his own private Twitter account.
It's not private.
No.
Again, you see.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think that's the catch, is that it's not private. And I think that he just, and I don't disagree with him, and I'm a huge fan of his, but when you have your private so-called Twitter account and your leading comment is your news affiliation, that it's like.
Bill, if you behave badly at the local carnival.
Yes, and I have.
And you were caught.
Yes.
You know, even though you're not at work, you still.
They'll say Bill left from WGN.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Andrew, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Can I give just a couple numbers here?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm going to make you even later. My
Please
fault.
Please do.
Hillary Clinton won Illinois overwhelmingly, but overwhelmingly anymore doesn't mean that much. The latest I saw was like 55 to 45. So only 10 percentage points. So, you know, there, no matter where you are, even though there might be, if she took 65% of the city, that means 35% voted for Donald Trump.
And
now, she did win, I want to say, also many more counties than two.
Oh, she did.
Not 102, which there are. I mean, if you look at the counties, which are often, you know, more rural and more Republican,
right.
Donald Trump won an overwhelming number, but I think her win was more like 10 or so.
But in the more populated counties.
Where there are more votes.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you for clearing that up. And see, that's why I trust Steve Bertrand for our news, and it's real, and I'm sick of this fake news crap, too.
I know. It's permeating.
It's disgusting.
It's everywhere. All right. We must take a break. Thank you for everybody for chiming in. Greatly appreciated. A break, some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. I should be so insulted by something that just happened, and yet I agree with you, so I can't be insulted. We're talking about photography.
Yeah, there, that's
really
all I wanted to
really
do. I didn't have time to cue it up.
So I said to Kevin, put a little flock of seagulls on if I had a photograph of you, and you shook your head like, oh, I've tried so hard to make this work. You said, how about Ringo Starr photograph? And you're right, that's a much better song.
Yeah, I mean, Flock of Seagulls, very disappointed we didn't go with them, but...
No, you did the right thing.
All right, thank you. Right. I knew you'd approve.
There's a new trend in photography, Wendy, that everyone needs to be aware of. I like when we're at the cutting edge of a trend, when a trend hasn't quite happened yet, but we can share with people and say, here's something to look out for, because this is going to be so popular. You know, have you ever seen people now... There's a thing called the selfie, and what it is you hold your camera up and you take a picture of yourself doing something important, like eating lunch... Or walking down a street.
You're telling us what a selfie is. Thanks,
yep.
Gramps.
That's also going to be a big popular trend, the selfie.
You're good.
Look for that in about 8 years ago. So, so people take pictures to celebrate the most magical moments of their life. Certainly if you're graduating or if you're getting engaged, whatever, you want some photographic evidence that this event took place, right? Well, here's something new. Breakup photography.
This is the dumbest thing I have ever heard of in my entire life.
I'm with you.
Tell me more.
All right. This is from the internet.
.com?
I think so. It tells the story of a couple, and it is Harrison Bach is his name, which is a cool name. If he didn't take that name, I would apply for that name. Harrison Bach and his girlfriend Jackie, who had been high school sweethearts.
Aww.
Here's what Harrison Bach says. I met her when I was 16 years old and she was 15 in math class. We sat next to each other. He explained this to Metro. A year later, we started dating. She was the first real date that I had ever been on. And she was the first kind of everything.
I get it.
They show... Oh, yeah.
Now you get it.
Now I get
you're
it.
You're very
took me
quick.
A couple extra... I was still thinking about Flock of Seagulls. The couple dated. What, Steve?
No, I had a moment there.
That's all right. The couple dated for about 2.5 years. I want to point out, and I pointed out yesterday during a story about a woman dangling off the side of the building, that she was very attractive and you got upset.
I didn't get upset. I just.
You said, what difference does that make? And you were right. If you're going to dangle off the side of a building, you can be pretty or ugly. It doesn't matter.
All right, what are you going to say about this girl?
Attractive people, both of them. Both Harrison Bach and Jackie are very attractive people. The couple dated
crucial
for about,
to the story. Thanks for putting that out there.
I'm just painting a picture for anybody listening.
They look like a young couple in love.
Yes. Yes.
I've seen better looking people.
That's hurtful. Would that ugly couple like the music of the Flock of Seagulls, do you think? Said ugly people music.
That guy wasn't really a looker.
The guy in Flock of Seagulls?
Yeah.
No. And you could, if you were a beaver and you needed a dam quickly, you could build it in that guy's hair, remember?
I liked the hair.
Everywhere.
I had hair like that in the 80s.
The couple dated for about 2.5 years, but decided to break up at the end of 2015.
Oh.
When they went their separate ways to university.
See, you can try it, can't you?
That's such a hard, I know
it
people
doesn't
have
work.
Done it.
I've not done it.
The odds are against it
yeah.
working.
Yeah, but you at least try it. You don't just have this heartfelt breakup before we walk down separate forks in the road.
Let me tell you what I know about Harrison Bach, Wendy. He's a realist. He knows that the odds are against he and Jackie, that if he's going, he was going to Michigan, and Jackie was heading out west to Los Angeles, and he did the math. He said to himself,
she's never coming back.
It's not going to work.
Yep. You moved to L.A., you're not coming back, right. Unless you run out of money.
He read the forecast.
He read the forecast, yeah. Steve. He knew she was going out to Los Angeles, and she'd probably meet John Mayer at a party. What chance does he have after that?
See, but now I'm mad at Harrison Bach because, you know, don't quit. Give it a try at least.
You say that, but...
Well, at least
you're
try
just
it.
Prolonging the heartache.
Don't give up on her, baby.
That's right.
A year and a half or so later, however, Harrison had an idea. He wanted to create a breakup photo shoot to show a side of relationships that people don't generally reveal.
Yeah, but usually it's not a beautiful, solemn goodbye. It's somebody throwing something at someone.
Right.
Action shots. That's your breakup photo. All your crap on the front lawn. I mean, it's nice that they can do this solemn, loving goodbye.
Right. But that's not how it usually plays out. Maybe he knew that if they did it in photograph form, it would end more personably. There wouldn't be any throwing or biting.
Biting, you added.
We've all had different experiences.
Wow.
I see, my friend.
Don't diss Bill Leff.
I will bite you if you break up with me. That was my reputation in high school and college. Go on, try to break up with me. Come at you with my teeth.
Don't leave me.
I was like that doll in Trilogy of Terror.
Oh, my God. That's the scariest thing ever.
That was me. Every girl was Karen Black, and I was that doll. I know only 11 people got that. I'm fine with that. We're not going to be on in afternoons much longer. I see my friends who are in relationships doing really nice professional photography photo shoots. I had the idea of doing the same thing in the same setting, but post-relationship and in a different way.
It's a nice concept, but they're the only ones who are going to be able to do this.
I think you're right. I do think you're right.
I wish cell phones were around to capture the human piranha Bill Leff.
We didn't have
you're going to leave me?
Come here.
Say that again. I can't hear you. Come closer.
I start filing my teeth. What are you doing? Are you going to bite me?
No.
Yeah, I might.
Oh,
I said you want to go out more, and you said bite me. Well, get ready.
Hello.
Here it comes.
You axe.
Who better to do it with, he said,
than his first
ex-girlfriend, Jack. Right.
He's first for everything.
Right. That's what he said. Those were his words. That's what he said, literally, Wendy. Fortunately, he says, she was keen to this idea.
That's a strange word.
Keen. This must be an old internet story. Yep, 1972. Just now, it's just now coming in over the printer.
Slow signal.
It's very slow signal.
You still have a modem?
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll tell you the rest of this hard-to-believe story, but it's true. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Flock of Seagulls, considered by many to be the best rock band of all time.
All right. How did I ever like them?
I still like. You don't like Flock of Seagulls anymore? I still enjoy their work.
I want to see your iPod.
I think
it's a 45 close and play.
I'll bring it in. You'll be shocked. Be ready to be shocked.
Because of the wiring.
Yeah.
A break. It's a Friday. Sorry, people.
Yeah.
We'll apologize for today's show.
No charge for today's show on the house.
That's why we're losing the
completely
afternoon.
Completely. This is the reason. This is the tape that they will play.
You guys aren't losing the afternoon. You're just moving it to a different venue.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Well, we're
you
losing
keep
2 hours.
The afternoon.
Can hear us
1 hour.
On the stream or on fillings. If you have a filling, you can listen. All right. So there's this couple who has decided that their relationship has been, up until now, a magical one. Harrison Bach is his name. He met his girlfriend Jackie when they were high school sweethearts. Sweethearts.
What's on your mind? Can I just tell you, though, honestly,
you know
listeners,
on my mind.
That
candy,
is what's on your mind.
Gum. I'm thinking about candy and gum.
You,
most of the day.
Right in the middle of a story, you saw that header, sweet, and it's like, ooh, sweet tarts. I know you.
I can't deny it.
I know.
That's what I'm thinking about. All right. They were in love. He was 16. She was 15. They met in math class. As he points out, she was his first everything. Wendy did the decoding on that.
It's not that hard to decode.
Started winking, so I know what that means now. But now they're going away. You know, they've been dating for a couple of years. Things have been great, but now they're going away to different universities. Harrison is going to a school in Michigan. Jackie is going to school in Colorado. I'm sorry, in California. So they just figured out we have to break up. We don't want to break up, but our relationship has come to a crossroads. We must break up. So he suggests.
Quitters.
Yeah, you could say that. You did say that. I heard you say that. He suggests that they break up and they do it in a photo shoot. This is a new trend, breakup photography. You're capturing the most magical moments of your life, the most important moments of your life. This is a breakup, so they're going to have this captured on film. Fortunately, as I pointed out, she liked the idea when Harrison suggested it. I love irony and kind of making people uncomfortable, not for shock, but to make people think, said Harrison. He's a smart kid. With their gray, moody, depressing vibe, the photos are certainly a far cry from the usual happy couple snapshots that we see all over social media. So these pictures seem to be done in black and white.
And they are moody.
They are very moody. They're wearing all dark clothes. They look sullen. She looks sad. He looks sad.
He's hugging onto her body, kneeling down while she's standing, begging her not to go. But
see, I was just going to ask you, what... In that particular photograph, she's standing up. They're in kind of a, it looks like a forest preserve parking lot or something almost. And she's looking off to the side, very sad. He's holding her kind of around the waist. He's kneeling down. So what do you think is being said in that picture? What do you think that represents?
He's like, I'm going to hold you here and act like I'm trying not to let you go away. You look really sad, okay?
Yeah.
You know what would be very artful?
Hmm.
Just show two hands. Unclasping,
apart,
yeah.
That's symbolic.
I'm going to start a new business.
You'd make a mint.
Who would do this other than them?
It's strange because when I first heard about this, I said to myself, you're taking a sad situation and making it even sadder, but this is a key moment in their lives. I mean, this was their first.
Oh, my God, listen to you.
You don't think it is? This was his first love. This was her first love.
Yeah, but it's done. They quit. If it's really the first love, you try it for as long as it can till it becomes sucky and then
so,
you hate each other.
What you're saying is if it was wow. really genuine, Wendy, it'd be too painful to pose, right?
I honestly, yes, that is. Thank you for putting words in my mouth. Someone has to. That is it. I mean, breakups are, they suck.
They do. Yes, they do.
So you, this is acting.
But don't you think there's something to, maybe you can learn from this? Isn't this a learnable moment? Can't you look back on this if you're him or her? Like from now on, you look back at that picture and you'll say,
what was I thinking?
Right.
Why did I do this?
I've made a mistake. That's the girl I need to be with. Don't you think he might?
You think he needs a picture to have that?
No, I'm
come
sure
to
it's
him?
Already in his head. I'm positive it's already in his head. Maybe he thought that by doing this, she would reconsider. Although it seemed to have been a joint
mutual.
Effort. They both seemed to.
They're both quitters.
I guess you could look at it that way.
I mean, I guess you can say they're doing the respectable thing.
It is.
But who knows? You know, people have long-distance relationships.
Did you have friends in your group who tried this? Like when they
Me.
When it was time for college. All right, so you went to one school and your boyfriend went to another. And how long did that relationship last once you were going to different schools? A
couple of years.
Did it really?
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. Almost everybody I know who tried this... Even with the high, no matter how high their hopes were, they broke up within a couple of months. I can't think of anybody.
Oh, that quickly?
Yeah.
I did not give Illinois State a chance because with a boyfriend at home, I used to come home every weekend or he would come out there.
Yeah.
So, I didn't like it because I didn't want to be torn apart.
Right.
But had we taken these pictures, perhaps that would have worked.
That's all that was missing. If photography existed when you broke up with your boyfriend... You'd still be with him.
But now I'm going to start a video service, and we can play the Greg Kinn Band
right.
and have pictures of you and your loved one. And then I like my hands coming, drifting
that
apart.
That's a beautiful picture.
Like where you show them clasped.
Right.
Picture and then one. All of a sudden, yes.
Maybe a flip book where the hands are together and then with each flip of the thumb, they drift farther and farther apart.
We should be in cahoots here.
It's hard to get emotional over a flip book, though.
Yeah, I guess.
Something about the flip book doesn't lend itself to sadness. It brings frivolity.
Greg Kinn's just happy we played the breakup right. song right now.
I know. All right, we must take a break, and then we will reunite with you in a little bit. I promise. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, Sunday night is the night. If you love your Hollywood, Sunday night's the best night of the year, the Academy Awards. Starts at 7:30. The red carpet starts in 10 minutes. Did you ever notice, I don't know if you watch it on E, but they really do. They started it about
noon.
It really is.
We do have it on.
And in Hollywood, Steve?
And it's terrible.
It's awful.
I have it on, too. It's just awful.
It's awful.
It's terrible TV.
Here's why. Hollywood, as most of life does, actually more in Hollywood than anywhere, it has a pecking order. So your big stars get there about a half an hour before the show. But not even your B-listers, C-listers, D-listers, or E-listers. A guy who was on an episode of Emergency will show up right. around noon with his wife.
Well, sure, because that's his big day to shine. Get there early and soak it all in.
Randy Mantooth.
Right. Randolph Mantooth will be there around noon.
Does anyone care? I mean, I know you guys, and I guess I do too, like to see what women are wearing.
I don't care.
But do you care who made it?
No.
No, not
who
at
never.
All. I thought they stopped asking that.
No, they still do. They still... They're supposed to balance it out with pertinent
questions.
Yeah, they're supposed to do that. But because that word is so hard to say out loud, they don't.
And Steve wanted to correct you immediately. Yeah, he didn't even give you a chance.
Right I was thing. Trying to help him.
He was trying
to
help.
Well, you know, it's like, oh, it's a yellow. It's a pretty yellow dress. Okay, thanks. Who made your dress? No one cares.
Right. You know,
no one's going to buy that dress. No one's going
to
shop.
Being married to a fashion-y woman, she cares.
Okay, one person cares about that.
No, I don't. So she cares about the designer,
I
Kevin?
Think the red carpet is probably her favorite part,
okay,
actually.
But does she care who the designer is?
Of course.
I will never, ever buy... Well, I can't really say that. I'm not going to buy a gown like that.
A Chateaubriand. Oh, it's a Chateaubriand.
That's steak.
If you're wearing that.
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga would wear that. But just because... So, all right. So Emma Stone wears something just stunning... What difference? You're not going to go and the next day go, I must have that dress.
He's like, hey, that's a hot little number, but that's it. You're not going to go buy
it. I agree.
It.
I'm totally with Steve on that.
Okay, you say a hot little number.
But it's such wasted time.
It's a cute little dress.
There's so many more important things you could ask that star than...
Well, then they don't have to pay for it, right, if they get a mention?
Well, I don't think they pay for it anyway.
Right.
Well, why not?
Because other people talk about it, but, you know, or they're seen in it, the
right.
pictures...
Right.
They can advertise with it later or something like that.
But. American Eagle should pay me.
Who are you wearing? American Eagle. you never hear that at the Oscars, ever.
That's a good question, though. I wonder if the designers are paying the shows to ask the questions.
Oh, Steve, you may have just hit on it.
Right.
That could be it.
Problem solved.
That could be it, exactly.
I do. I mean, you know, I like when I see Stella McCartney stuff because I think she's really cool, but
right.
I can't afford any of her stuff. Diamond-studded Adidas.
It's pricey, isn't it?
Yeah. And there are fashionistas who really will go out and buy something from that designer, maybe based on the dress. Not the dress, because they'd never afford it.
I wonder what percentage of the viewing audience has.
One.
Maybe 1%.
0.01.
You might be there.
000 point Kevin's wife.
I'm sure there's others.
Not a lot. Because it's so expensive. Even the stars themselves, they're not. I mean, like I said, they're not paying for it. It's loaned to them more times than not. They don't get to keep it.
And
they get
like
to wear it.
A $2 million diamond necklace
right.
provided by Cartier.
Right.
You know who? They can't even afford. Well, I guess they could afford it, but why should they if they can wear it one night and return it?
Think of it. I mean, wouldn't you want to? You know. Chris Bryan wants his World Series jersey.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want maybe the dress or the tux you wore? No, they don't even have them. They
right.
don't keep them.
They have to return it. Let's do role play. We're on the red carpet. You're a reporter. I'm me. Ask me who I'm wearing.
Hi. First of all, don't take this the wrong way. Who are you?
That's hurtful. That's hurtful right out of the box.
Are you here to watch the show?
No,
Were you in a show?
I'm nominated for an Academy Award.
Oh, my God. For what?
For my work. Body of Work. I'm getting.
Is that the name of the movie, Body of Work?
No, I'm getting the Eugene Hirschfeld Humanitarian Award this year.
Oh, and you're congratulations.
Snippy. I'd say to my publicist, wearing? Kevin, write this woman's name down. She's snippy.
Blacklisted.
Blacklisted.
Who are you wearing besides the Breckenridge baseball cap?
I am wearing Granimals.
I wish I had money to send you there to actually to say that to someone.
I would go so far as to find Garanimals. I would wear Garanimals, and then I would proudly announce, I'm wearing Garanimals.
See that? I wish you were winning an Oscar.
Me too.
I know you do, but me for too. Different reasons.
That'd be nice. All right. So here's what I have found. Because here's all we know about Sunday. We know that the big stars will be there. And we know that there will be some sort of controversy, because that's what the Academy Awards is. Somewhere along the line, something controversial is said or done. We don't know what it is yet, but that's what we can look forward to. Over at MSN, they have put together what they consider to be the most controversial moments in Oscar history. Can we take a break and then share them?
Mm-hmm.
All right. The most controversial moments in all the Academy Award history coming your way next. Bill and Wendy from the red carpet, WGN. All right, Sunday night, you'll be treated to the Academy Awards presentation. Jimmy Kimmel is hosting. We're all looking forward to it. But over the years, there have been many, 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 many controversial moments at the Academy Awards. Let's share some of them with you, courtesy of the good people over at MSN. These are in no particular order. They're not in the order in which they took place. They're not the craziest to the least craziest or the other way around. These are just random controversial Oscar moments. See how many of them you remember. Angelina Jolie's bizarre acceptance speech.
When she made out with her brother?
She in the audience, she has a brother named Jamie, who she was very affectionate with.
She made out with him. It was pretty close to making out with him.
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah. All right.
It was kind of uncomfortable.
It was way friendlier than your regular brother and sister would be.
Mm-hmm.
Way more.
Maybe they haven't seen each other in a while.
Let's go with that.
I remember it being very
they
bizarre.
They were separated as very small children and reunited right at the second that the camera caught them making out. Okay, I'll give you that. Then, after the kissing, she said this in her speech, "I am so in love with my brother right now," and then afterwards kissed him on the mouth at parties. That's what we remember.
Well, I wasn't at the parties.
No, but they had photography, so they showed it in the newspapers, in the tabloids. I would say that was one of the more controversial moments, was that weird Angelina Jolie and Jamie. Jennifer Lopez's outfit at the 2001 Oscars. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
How would you best describe it? Kind of sheer.
And slit down the middle very low.
Yeah. Although, if you're talking about slits down the middle, remember when Angelina Jolie had... the dress with the weird slit, and she kept posing.
Yes.
Every time they'd show her, she had a weird pose. And then one of the guys who wrote the movie The Descendants, when they won for best screenplay, he stood up on the stage and did that exact same pose.
I do remember that. That's when I used to watch it. And I don't know, and I may be stepping on another weird atrocity that's going to come up. But wasn't there, and I don't remember if this was the Academy Awards or a talk show, but she had Billy Bob Thornton's blood in a vial.
Right.
Was that Academy Awards or Ellen?
I don't remember that being an award show. Okay. I remember whenever they would talk to her anywhere, she kept...
a little vial of his blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he had one of her blood too, didn't he?
They were made for each other. Sorry that didn't work out. She was too into her brother.
I don't know what that was all about.
I don't either, Bill.
It's very strange.
Unforgettable.
How about this one? Back in 1993, and this is one people always talk about that the Academy Awards might be fixed. Marissa Tomei won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for My Cousin Vinny, but people are convinced that Jack Palance read the wrong name on the teleprompter.
I've heard that rumor for years, but that can't be true.
I don't think it's true, but a lot of people say, because if you... you know, people always handicap, like, who's going to be the most likely to win and the least likely to win? She, in a field of five, everybody said, well, she's the least likely to win. It's not going to be Marissa Tomei. And then she won, and then everybody went, well, Jack Palance read the wrong name, but I don't know if he did or not.
Who did they think should have won? Can you remember? Because it's like, how can you read the wrong name? Don't you imagine, just for that particular reason, that... you read the nominees, and then when you open it up, there's just one name there?
I think it's been said a lot. Well, I'll give you the best example. Remember when John Travolta introduced, instead of Idina Menzel, Adele Dazeem, and then for the next few days he was going around going, you know, the teleprompter was so far away and I didn't have glasses and I was trying to remember, I was squinting and I couldn't see the name. So Jack Palance, he didn't have any glasses, so maybe, I mean, it's possible.
So he just said who he wanted?
Yeah.
Yeah, but don't those...
Tie goes to Jack Palance. He gets to decide.
This is the most exciting part, too. They have these lovely, you know, envelopes sealed with a big sticker, so they're and the winner is...
Yeah.
Don't you think the actual name is written there just in case the teleprompter goes out or something?
I wouldn't even put it on a teleprompter. I would only put it in the envelope. Yeah. And they can't say, and the winner is. They have to go and the Oscar goes to because... We live in a world where there's no more losers.
Are you kidding me?
No, they don't say in the winner is anymore.
No, never. That'd be wrong.
And the Oscar goes
too. That's not wrong. I hate everyone.
Wow.
Wow, Pollyanna, where'd you go?
Really? They've never said the winner is?
No, they used to say it.
About 10 years ago?
Yeah, about 10 or 12 years ago.
I like the Oscar goes to actually better. I really do.
They should go, and the losers are.
Right.
And then hold up the L on their forehead.
Bill.
Yes.
Okay, so you made me think here, but... I don't think when people read the winner or the Oscar goes to person that they're looking at the teleprompter.
No, they usually go to the envelope. But the controversy with Jack Palance is Jack Palance was something of a loose cannon. And that was was that the one where he was doing the one arm push ups with Billy Crystal?
Oh, I remember that too. Pretty in
good
shape.
He was nuts, right? No. All right. So that must have been the year he was nominated. And then the next year, he was a presenter.
Well, he would have won, right? Did he win and then presented to
the... Right. He won Best Supporting Actor for... what's the Billy Crystal movie where they're cowboys? I can't think of the name of
City Slickers?
City Slickers. Right. He won Best Supporting Actor for City Slickers. And then the next year, he got to present for Best Supporting Actress. And they were all saying, I don't know that he read the right name. But I don't remember.
They would have corrected that.
I think so.
That we read the other day about Oscars that were revoked even after the fact.
So they definitely would have.
Well, yeah.
Somebody would have went to the stage and said, Mr. Palance, with all due respect, you've read the wrong name. Congratulations, Marissa Tomei. You win a lovely fruit basket. But the real winner is, and then giving them the Oscar. Right?
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Here's another one. Now, this one I didn't think was that big of a deal, but people still talk about this. There was a movie, Crash, that won for Best Picture. This was in 2006, when the heavy favorite was Brokeback Mountain. Everybody said, well, Brokeback Mountain is definitely going to win, but it didn't win. Crash won.
I liked them both.
They were both good movies, really good movies. It says here, even presenter Jack Nicholson raised his legendary eyebrows and mouthed the word, whoa. Which Keanu Reeves wrote for him. Keanu Reeves said, when you're up there, say whoa. People will love it. Even Jack Nicholson was surprised, and it takes a lot to surprise Jack Nicholson. So that's another one that everybody considers to be a controversial moment. I don't know. Those were two good movies. You can't take it away from Crash. That was a good movie.
Can I just say I went to Snopes.com, and it says Marissa Tomei awarded Oscar by mistake. It's false.
Yeah, somebody would have caught that. There's too much writing on it.
It was supposed to go, everyone thought, to Vanessa Redgrave for her performance in Howard's End.
Yeah. Was that the favorite there?
That's what they say. Yeah.
But those guys from Price Waterhouse, that's their job. They would have been all over that. It's the only reason they get invited is in case there's a mistake. Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins attending the 1993 Oscars. I don't remember this at all. What would that have been?
Bull Durham?
The then couple used the global stage to speak out about Haitian rights.
I remember this.
And that got them and Richard Gere, who spoke out against China's treatment of Tibet that same year, temporarily banned from the ceremonies.
Oh, I didn't know that. I remember that. These, though.
Sarandon won Best Actress in 1996. Tim Robbins won Best Supporting Actor in 2004. But they were both temporarily banned from the ceremonies for their speaking out on Haitian rights. That's the one taboo subject in Hollywood. You cannot speak out about Haitian rights or you will be banned. And Mark Giangreco will not be paid. I don't know why he must suffer the brunt of this, Wendy, but he must. We talked about this one yesterday. Sasheen Littlefeather at the 1973 Oscars. That's the woman who accepted the award for Marlon Brando when he won the Oscar for The Godfather.
And I'll ask you this. I know your answer. You remember the David Niven moment?
Oh, God, yeah. That was the streaker, right?
Yeah.
I remember the guy. Did he have a sign?
No. He didn't have anything. He was naked. He ran across. This is when, for the kids listening, there was a time in American history where streaking was all the rage. You'd run across something without your clothes on.
That was so dumb.
Right. So so he's up there. He's about to present. And then another guy came up and presented instead.
Look at that. Look at that.
Do you remember what David Niven said?
Now, I remember he was very funny, but I don't remember what he said.
Let me see if I can find the exact quote. It was something about, I can't believe you're applauding for a man who just displayed his shortcomings or something.
Yes,
something
it was along, something like that.
Something very British.
But then there was some other guy who showed up on some awards show and it had something bomb on
Soy
it.
Soy bomb.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was
the Grammys?
Grammys. Soy bomb.
What's your sign going to say when we see you on Sunday?
Soy bomb 2017.
Garanimal.
Right.
Bill, leave your baseball cap on when you streak. Just so
I will,
we know
so you know it's
you.
Me. You won't know it's me.
That's
if I
like
don't
the Yogi Berra story where he said in spring training there was two streakers who jumped over the outfield wall and then ran in, jumped in over the dugout, and someone said, "Well, Yogi, they had bags over their heads," as he told the story. And
they
Yogi,
said, "Was it men or women?"
Yeah, were they men or women? He goes, "How do I know? I told you they had bags over their heads."
That's priceless.
Hysterical. All right. We must take a break, and then there's more show, so stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. As you all know, Sunday night is the Academy Awards. Jimmy Kimmel is hosting. Should be a pretty good show. We are going through some of the more controversial moments in Academy Award history.
I bet Jimmy Kimmel plays it pretty safe, though.
Do you think he will? Yeah.
I was reading an interview where he was asked if he's going to do any political jokes, and he said, yes, the name Donald Trump will come up, I guarantee. I just don't know to what extent.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I feel like this is his big thing. I don't know if he's going to push it.
Well, you knew last year when there was a lot of criticism about the Academy and their reluctancy to pick anyone other than white people for most of the for all of the categories,
yeah.
Really. You knew that Chris Rock was going to address it, and he did. He did a really nice job last year. So this year, with Donald Trump's presidency being at the forefront of the news, I don't know how you do a monologue at the Academy Awards and not bring it up in some way, shape,
or form. He said the name Donald Trump will be mentioned.
Sure.
But Chris Rock had every reason to bring up the lack of diversity,
yeah.
Because that's what it was all about. Does the president really have anything to do with the awards?
But, you know, there's got to be an exhaustion point coming up one day soon,
yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, unless it's to a specific event, if it's just the general Trump stuff,
right.
That's all we've been hearing. And
that kind of puts the damper on my watching fun, because looking forward to their speeches to see what they have to say, it just turns into, you know,
right.
This and that about our president and blah, 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 and... Again, I didn't vote for the man, but I'm just there to pretend it didn't happen.
Do you? It happened? It was in the news.
I don't like to constantly be reminded he's there.
She's there in her Gloria all red gown and just hoping it didn't happen.
All right. You know how Meryl Streep got a lot of attention for her speech about...
That was done tastefully.
It was about Donald Trump, but without mentioning Donald
right.
Trump's name. All right. So do you think that anyone was swayed when they were looking at the five nominees for Best Actress? Do you think anybody went, well, I would like to see more of that sort of thing from Meryl Streep. She gets my vote, just because they thought we'll get a little bit more of that speech if she wins the Academy Award. Do you think that swayed anybody or not?
I think it swayed them not to vote for her.
Do you think that's possible? That's very possible.
Because it's just enough already.
Except, you know, in that room... The Hollywood
majority.
Community, yeah, swings extreme to the left. So you're going to get your audience. There will be a few detractors, but for the most part, they're going to be on your side if you take a swipe at them.
Okay, that's in the room, but what about the people watching at home?
Different story.
Maybe you could argue it hurt her then, Bill, if everyone's assuming that everyone in the room or almost all the voters are
yeah.
liberal.
Yeah.
So they're assuming the other five or six are liberal too,
yeah.
right? They wouldn't choose her over another.
Oh,
person.
Yeah.
So maybe the conservatives would vote against her.
That's very possible. Yeah, that's extremely possible. All right, here's a couple more. And then I've got a couple of moments that didn't make MSN's list, but I thought they were controversial. Here's one from them. That's Elia Kazan at the 1999 Oscars. I don't know if you remember, but talk about dividing a room. Elia Kazan winning an honorary Oscar really did that. Kazan directed such great films as On the Waterfront, but he also named names during the Hollywood blacklist era. When Martin Scorsese presented him with an honorary Oscar, some stood and applauded, some clapped but kept their seats. And then in brackets it says Steven Spielberg and Jim Carrey. Those were two of the guys who did that. Several glowered with disapproval, most notably Ed Harris and Nick Nolte. I still remember the camera cutting to Nick Nolte and his girlfriend, and her name escapes me right now. She used to be on, remember the show News Radio with Phil Hartman?
Yes.
She was the girl on the show. Character's name was Beth, girl with red hair. That was Nick Nolte's girlfriend at the time. So when he's going up to make his speech.
Vicki Lewis.
Vicki Lewis? Yeah.
That's what it says.
Is that it?
Yeah.
All right. So they show Elia Kazan making his way to the stage, and then they show the audience, as we said, many standing and applauding, but some not. And they showed Nick Nolte and his girlfriend, and they just had these scowls on their faces like, this is not good. This man does not deserve to be up there.
You know, it's funny because I remember watching that and not knowing about the whole thing, not being such a film buff.
Yeah.
So I had to research that afterwards because I didn't really get what was happening.
Yeah, he ratted out people in the Hollywood community for possibly being communists. And all right, how about Vanessa Redgrave's speech at the 1978 Oscars? Redgrave's speech, when she won the Best Supporting Actor for the drama Julia, began well enough, where she praised the fight against fascism and racist Nazi Germany. But when she mentioned the Zionist hoodlums who burned her in effigy because of her support for Palestine, the audience began booing her.
Wow.
Writer Patty Chayefsky criticized her later in the ceremony before presenting a Best Screenplay Academy Award. Yeah, it really...
Tough room.
Yes. And actually, I'll give you one more of those tough room stories. Michael Moore got incredible applause as he went up on stage for his win for the documentary Bowling for Columbine. But then during his speech, the same thing happened. He went from really having them in the palm of his hand to losing the room because he kept going and going and going.
I have such mixed emotions on actors using that platform to change the world. I really do.
Yeah.
I understand because this is their time when people are paying attention.
Yeah.
But they're not winning their roles for their work in the world. You know what
right.
I mean? It kind of stick with the plan here.
Right.
I have mixed emotions on it.
Don't you think, though, if you're going to do it, I don't know if the key is to be subtle, but to not be too, like with Michael Moore, I like Michael Moore a lot, but even I'm watching going, oh, don't. Back up, please. This isn't helping your cause at all. And you could see the look on his face like, uh-oh, I might have gone too far.
Oh,
you could just see it. Yeah. All right, now here's a couple really quick ones that I think some people will remember. Do you remember when they did at the beginning of one of the Academy Awards, they did a montage of songs, and for some reason the cast of Snow White, and I don't know why they chose Snow White.
Was animated on stage?
They were not animated. Snow White was live, and then Rob Lowe shows up, and he's like Prince Charming, and he starts singing modern day songs as Prince Charming with Snow White, and they cut to a shocked audience because the audience is going, I don't understand this. What are they doing? Do you remember any of that?
I do vaguely remember that for some reason.
It was so bizarre.
Yeah, but Snow White's been in movies.
I know. But there was no context for it being, like, no part of it made sense. It was so surrealistic to just have Rob Lowe. And I get it, he's handsome, so he could play Prince Charming.
Totally, he's my Prince
Charming.
Then
he started singing modern day songs, and it was just weird. It didn't go anywhere.
That is weird.
Another one, Anne Hathaway and James Franco co-hosting. This would have been about 6 or 7 years ago. She wanted to be there. James Franco obviously had no interest at all in hosting. So anytime the two of them were on stage together, he just was so empty. He had no interest at all in doing it. Zero. And I'll give you one more. This is considered by many to be the worst joke in Academy Award history. Do you know what it is?
No.
This would be David Letterman's Uma Oprah joke.
Oh, yeah. That, God, boy, did that get a ride. For 20 years, people kept saying that.
I know.
I don't even remember the joke.
there wasn't much of a joke. He just wanted to introduce them because he had similar names. And he's looking around the room and he introduced, he goes, Uma Oprah, Oprah Uma. And he just kept doing it and he got no response. It was really...
Except from wacky DJs who played that audio the next day for 20 years.
Yeah. That's the only attention it got. And then
wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad. But then I've heard people talk about, oh, that was the worst Academy Award ever. And it wasn't.
No, it
he
was
actually
not.
Did a he did a really good job. But that's the joke that people always point at as that's when he lost him, right then and there. And then do you remember the next year they gave it back to Billy Crystal, and Billy Crystal did a thing where he was in an airplane chasing after Billy Crystal and he's yelling Uma and Oprah at
Yes.
him. It's really funny.
He is really great. He is almost the perfect host for that.
Yeah.
But Letterman, what cracks me up about him sometimes is he just says something to make himself laugh, and I'm okay with that.
I know. Yeah. All right. A break and then more shows. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It is Friday, the best day ever invented. You got to say that more often.
I'll say it on Fridays for sure.
Okay.
I don't want to say it on Mondays because then people will go, we got to wait 4 more days for the best day ever invented. But Friday is the best day ever invented, so enjoy it. Wendy, if I told you that there was a crazy bizarre story, the likes of which you would think could never happen, what state would you think that story took place in?
Well, because of you, I would think Florida.
You'd be right.
But I hear this from everyone, and you've told me. I don't understand why strange things happen in Florida. It's the happiest place on earth. Well, Orlando is.
Disney World is the happiest place on earth, without a doubt. But the rest of Florida has a weird vibe to it that I can't explain. But so many times when we see these stories, time and time and time again, they're based in Florida. It's not even close. Like, there's nobody in second place. It's just Florida and then a 49-way tie for second. I don't know why.
That's
too much sun? Is it too much sun? It's the Sunshine State, you know.
Is that because everybody from all over the place moves there thinking it's just going to be warm and wonderful? So you get a lot of transplants?
I don't know if that's it. I don't know if that's it. I mean, that certainly happens to coastal Florida. You know, people go, I'm tired of the cold weather in Chicago. I'm going to live in West Palm Beach. So there's some element of that.
See, I would think, don't a lot of retirees go there?
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be as weird because old people don't do weird stuff, really.
Right. They just
have
crackers and some tea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And stay out of the sun between 10 and 2.
Right. I think maybe it's the natives, the people who have been there. And if you're a Florida native, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just saying maybe from most of these stories, I get the feeling there are people that have been there for generations and generations, not recent Florida transplants.
The only thing I can attribute it to is there are so many pastel-colored houses that maybe that gets to you.
It messes with your head. It messes with your equilibrium. When police asked a man, you're going to enjoy this story. Now, I will tell you right now, this is not a happy story,
but I think
you'll enjoy it because of the fact. I'm not even going to tell you why. I'll let you figure it out. When police asked a man how his girlfriend got shot in the leg, he told them his dog did it.
Now that is a trained dog.
Right. Jacksonville, Florida police, responding to a 911 call about a shooting on Tuesday night, met with Brian Murphy, who told them that his dog Diesel had accidentally shot his girlfriend while she was in bed.
Well, if the gun was laying there and the dog jumped up to give her a kiss on the face, perhaps he stepped on the trigger and it shot her.
Or maybe the dog was cleaning the gun and the gun went off.
Now
while the
you're
dog
pushing
was
it.
Cleaning the gun.
Everyone knows dogs don't clean guns.
Right. That's true. All right. You saw through me. Now, a quick warning, there's a Florida name coming up. There's a name that's coming up that could only take place in Florida.
All right.
Murphy told officers that his girlfriend, Summer Miracle, was sleeping. Think about that name for a minute.
Sounds like a feminine product.
Summer Miracle. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Summer was sleeping when Diesel woke him up, meaning Brian, wanting to go outside. When Diesel and Murphy went back into the house, the dog led the way into the bedroom, he said. This according to First Coast News. Murphy reported, which is also a bank, I believe. First Coast? I think it is. Murphy reported that he then saw a flash and heard a bang. He told police that he thinks Diesel jumped up on the nightstand, which then caused the gun to fire.
See, that's sort of my...
That's almost exactly yours.
Attorney.
His alibi maker.
That's another entrepreneurship I need to look into.
Alibi maker is Summer Miracle's cousin, by the way. That's a weird coincidence. Your daughter is only going to be a stripper if her name is Summer Miracle. That's it. That's the complete. If you're the guidance counselor at Summer Miracles High School, you say to her, "You're going to be a stripper. There's nothing else you can do about it."
Bill, she's
that's it.
No longer with us.
No, I don't know. We don't know that.
Oh, she didn't die.
No.
Oh, okay then.
In Florida, dogs
joke
shoot,
away.
Dogs shoot women all the time in Florida. They don't die. It's a miracle. It's a summer miracle.
A full year summer miracle.
Yes, year round summer miracle. The bullet from Murphy's gun, according to the story, hit Miracle in the leg. It is a miracle. Murphy told police that he covered Miracle's wound with a towel before calling 911. Miracle is not sure how exactly she was shot, according to the Palm Beach Post. She told police that she was asleep when the bullet struck her.
Boy, that's a crappy way to wake up. I don't like my alarm clock, but a bullet in your leg?
That's the worst alarm clock of all time. Miracle was treated at the hospital. The Children's Miracle Network, I bet, had something to do with this, Wendy. She was treated at the hospital for injuries that do not appear to be life-threatening. Another miracle. They keep piling on. There was no word on whether charges would be filed. Now, in the other 49 states, they would look into this further and probably file a charge or two. But in Florida, you get this sort of result. The cops just get together and they look at and then they go
Sounds
about their
good
business.
To me.
Right, that could happen. A dog could shoot a woman in the bed. Why not? I get it.
I could see this happening. Poor Diesel. He's got so much guilt.
I know. It's not fair.
So right. Has he been arrested?
No, no one's being arrested for this. They just, you know, they chalk it. In Florida, they just chalk it up. They go crazy. You know, they just look at each other.
I thought you were just saying
that's
that.
Crazy. No. It could think about how poorly this story could have ended.
Yeah.
This could have been the most tragic of all stories, but no. Diesel gets to keep his gun license. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll find out what Roe and Ann have. That's coming up in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.